It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We'll take a look at the new iPad with Becky Worley. Yay! Joanna Stern from ABC and our favorite Denise Howell from This Week in Law. Also, speaking of law, we'll talk to the guy who won the suit against AT&T for throttling his bandwidth. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 345, recorded March 18th, 2012. No strings attached. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Get better connected to the people you depend on for success. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code TWIT. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small businesses that saves time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users and try the service free for 30 days unlimited use at FreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on TWiT. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Technology. We cover the week's tech news in obsessive detail, and we're proud to do so. Joining me right now, my old friend, former producer of the Screensavers and Call for Help, now at ABC GMA. Good morning, America. Becky Worley, good to see you.
Great to be here.
Haven't been here in ages. I'm so glad to get you in.
I missed you guys, but I'm a seasonal person, so I'm 8 months away from Black Friday, so I'm okay. I can come see you.
Does it get crazy?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And you've been doing, on Good Morning America, you do a lot of, TV infomercial stuff.
Infomercial,
you still doing that
stuff? I'm now doing exercise stuff for them.
Very that's good.
Broad-based consumer tomorrow.
You are
morning.
The Jillian Michaels of tech, actually.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And my abs will aspire to that. That's great. Tomorrow you can find me teaching people how to get exercise while doing their housework.
Oh, geez.
I know. Ooh. I know.
I thought housework was exercise.
I know. Well, there's a way to get even more.
You just gotta right. Hold your. I get exercise while doing podcasts. I just hold it in.
No, your ball. More movement, you know. When you
I sit on my ball. Yeah, yeah, that's good.
More movement.
Also here, Denise Howell from the Bag and Baggage blog and, of course, the host of This Week in Law. And you, I don't look now, Denise. You've got a little panda bear climbing up on your microphone. It's okay.
I do.
Don't
yes.
freak out.
Some sort of mech with a jock strap over your other shoulder.
Yes, the chameleon has been banished to the other room. So I'm pretty sure that nothing immediately around me is a living, but should anything crawl into the screen, just let me know.
Denise is the fabulous host of This Week in Law, and we really love having her on the network. And it's so great to get you on TWiT every once in a while. We should get you on more, frankly.
I love doing it. It's great to be here.
Yay. And we want to welcome a newbie. And as soon as you meet this next person, you might say there's something going on with this panel, and there is. Let's welcome Joanna Stern, of ABC. Congratulations, abcnews.com/tech.
Thank you.
Nice to have you.
I was going to hold up a picture of a man. I was trying to look for a magazine here.
I see a little picture of us. No, that's the wrong song.
No, I don't have anything.
So how long have you been at ABC? You just went there.
3 weeks.
Really? Yeah. That really did just go there.
I just finished 3 weeks.
Wow. How's it been?
It's been great. It's been a very interesting adjustment to go from the world of tech blogs and tech sites to a mainstream media outlet, but it's been great. It's been really fun. You know, the new iPad launch made it a crazy couple weeks, definitely a good way to start. I mean, just get thrown in there. What other way would there be in tech?
Well, let me introduce you to your colleague at ABC, Becky Worley.
I begged Eileen. I said, "Get Joanna on if we're having a chick panel."
Because you've never met.
We've never met. I'm like, we're going to be.
We've tweeted.
True. That is not the real world.
I know. I wish I could be in that studio right now. To be honest,
I
then
do
we
too.
Would really
Well, the next time you're out here, come. Did you fly out?
I will. I'll have to come soon.
Did you fly out to the Apple announcement a couple of weeks ago?
I did.
See, we should have gotten you then.
I should have come that week, but then I went straight to South by Southwest. I'll come back for the next Apple announcement, which I'm sure will be in, you know, a couple of weeks.
Has been a really crazy couple of weeks for tech people. Did you go to South by, Becky?
No, I was on vacation in Hawaii, and actually I've never been to South by because it coincides with the home and houseware show, people. I mean,
if you're gonna test Swiffers, you gotta go to the home and houseware show.
Well, the second year I went, the second year I went to home and housewares, I searched Twitter. There were 14 tweets from the show, and it was happening
that's total
at the exact same time as South by, where there were like 37,000 tweets.
Is there a hashtag for home and houseware?
No,
I'm gonna type it in right now and see.
Know. It'll have something to do with like silicone for the kitchen or something. I mean, it's
one tweet.
Isn't that classic?
That's it.
And it's a huge show. I mean, it's maybe half the size of the CES convention space, but it's massive. And you found
hilarious.
Yeah.
I know.
They're not really geeked out there.
Not so much. Yeah. Not so much. But if you're into
kitchen
gadgets,
they'll set up shop there.
There are probably more women at the Home and Houseware show than there are at South by. Maybe not.
Oh, definitely. Well, I don't know. I've never been to South by.
So the reason I mention that is you may notice that this is, you know, usually I have to say, I hate to say it, but we are kind of, the panels are male dominated. Mm-hmm. They tend to be sausage fests. But
we know nothing about that.
I don't know what the analog is. Is it a donut fest? I don't know what the analog is. I'm sorry, sir. He just snorted his coffee. I apologize. I timed that very poorly. But this is March is the month of women, Women's Month.
Right. It's also March Madness. So there's no dude who is getting out
NCAA.
Here.
NCAA. So welcome. We're going to do a panel of all women, and already I've really, you know, just destroyed. I'm just going to shut up now.
But I would like to just reassure the men who are watching and listening, and ladies, I just want to make this pact, okay? We will not discuss getting more girls in technology.
Thank you.
We will not, except for this one disclamatory time, use the word menstruation. And we will not try and convert anyone to follow us on Pinterest, okay?
Okay, let me ask, because I am a big Pinterest fan.
I just promised we wouldn't.
Can we talk about how much I hate pink gadgets? Is that on the
Yes,
topic?
That's good. No girl gadgets. We don't like those.
Okay.
They do, you know, they're still, in this day and age, there's still, what is the, there's a cell phone that is for women.
It's the Rhyme.
Yeah, the Rhyme.
Joanna. What the hell?
Rhyme.
What the hell does that mean? Does it, you
I
think
have
that,
it right here.
You got the dongle, Joanna?
The Rhyme with the dongle.
That seems contrarian.
So I mean, does that work? They wouldn't do it, right? There must be it must actually work to market a phone to women.
I thought the bedazzling kits were good enough.
Yeah.
Do you really need something that's at an operating system level, or
is it a pink desktop? What do they do, Joanna, to make that a woman?
I'm trying to find my dongle. So the dongle was the biggest part of the women.
So they
they
customize
features.
The dongle to make it more
so the dongle
feminine?
Lights up and you put it on your bag.
Oh dear!
So when you, it's for women who have their, you know, and it's actually not a terrible
that's clever.
Idea.
So the phone is in the phone is in the purse, and the thing lights up outside the purse, so you know it's ringing.
That's
actually
right.
A good idea. I could use that. That's not a bad idea.
I like the add-on dongle.
That wasn't the worst idea. The worst thing was that it only came in purple.
Right.
I found it.
There's a dongle.
Oh, okay.
It's a purple dongle.
Okay.
Purple dongle. It only came in purple, so it was really heavily, you know, without saying it was for women, they said it was for women.
Yeah. Right.
That was my biggest problem with it. Yeah. But it was a pretty clever idea. I actually, when I had written, I wrote an editorial when I was at The Verge about it, and a lot of men wrote in saying, we would have also liked to buy this phone, just wish it wasn't purple.
Right. No, I like purple. Purple's a good color. You're wearing purple. Purple's a good color.
And it isn't.
It's not pink.
From a use case scenario, I mean, a dude's not going to have the thing in his pocket and then have the dongle hanging out.
Well, we carry briefcases.
Who carries a briefcase? Hanging out.
Nobody cares.
My dad still has a briefcase, actually.
You're right. Nobody does carry a briefcase. But with backpacks. We carry backpacks.
Okay.
Clutches.
Man bag.
Man purses.
Man bags.
No.
Merses, as they call them.
Merse.
All right. Let's move on.
Yeah, I'm going to be looking for the Rhyme the entire show.
No, that's okay. We got it. Actually, I think I think yeah, I mean, you reviewed it, didn't you,
yeah,
for
yeah,
All About Android?
I agree with Joanna, but the worst part was actually the commercial. The commercial for the rhyme.
Right.
This thing with the multiple hands.
Oh, because women,
the tentacle.
You yeah, do so much.
Because we multitask, right?
Yes.
She's this an was, Indian goddess.
This was the worst.
Oh, God, wow. That was the worst.
It's so interesting, okay, because Verizon's the same company that does the robots for the droid ads.
Yeah.
And I was actually, I wish I could find that editorial right now. That was the whole point of what I had written, was that if Verizon hadn't gone so heavily with that marketing of
the
it
macho.
Being for men,
yeah.
maybe they wouldn't have had to do this sort of reverse right. campaign for, oh, well, now look, Android for women.
I even the droid ads scare me. I don't know. I don't think they're for anybody. They're horrible. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, the one with the razor with it, it basically cuts off everyone's head or the lampposts.
Horrible. What? Who are they selling that to?
People who want to cut off lampposts.
It's really sharp. So this was the week the iPad came out. Now, Ms. Worley has not seen
Mm-mm.
a new iPad.
I will ooh
what?
And ah. I know. Can you believe it? Like I said,
haven't
I
seen one yet either. So
you
do
have
hold
any
that.
Well, here, you can look at that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? Go ahead and just type on that.
What do you think about it, Denise?
Is it? It's really good looking, isn't it? No, I'll tell you. At first, I thought this screen was going to like your eyes would go like Jessica Rabbit with boing, but they don't. They don't actually do that. It's not immediately apparent how better, much better it is. But as you spend time with it, it gets better and better.
You where really, do you notice it most?
Launch a book application would be one thing to do because text is of course incredibly crisp. So I'll launch the Kindle app, and you'll see kind of immediately that. It's
also in video, in HD video, it really, really looks good.
Well, that's one question because, okay, the screen is quad resolution, 3.1 megapixels, and it is now, 2048 by 1536 means it could do 1080p video. But on a screen that size, I don't know, is there much of a difference between a 720p video and a 1080p video? Do you notice a difference?
I mean, I was testing some clips I have here, and definitely the 1080p video I downloaded from iTunes
looked better.
Way better on the new iPad versus the iPad 2. I mean, you definitely see the difference.
But
you see the difference at even standard definition video on that screen.
Right. I just feel like it's the same IPS style LCD screen. It's not a Super AMOLED or something, but the resolution is so high. It is, I think, 260 pixels per inch, that it just feels a lot crisper. Feels a lot
softer. Yeah, and the color saturation is higher, too, so colors look better.
But you know what I'm most excited about, and I don't hear a lot about it? I think the camera blows me away.
How are you using it?
So I have a question for you. Do you take pictures a lot with your iPad?
Yeah, you want to see what it looks like when I take pictures with my iPad?
Yeah.
For those of you listening, Leo has the cover of the iPad
well,
on
I have
his
one
forehead
of those,
like a visor.
I have one of those iPad covers that, see, the camera is right down here. So normally the cover folds over the camera, so I have to do that. Or you could take a picture like this, which is equally kind of dorky, have the cover hang down from the bottom. But you know what? I think we're all going to get used to the idea. Even when I pull it out, it still looks kind of silly. But I think we're all going to get used to the idea because it is, it's essentially the same sensor, I guess, in the iPhone 4 with the lens system from the iPhone 4S. But it is so good.
Is so good.
And what's different, what's exciting about it is you're seeing the image. It's like a view camera.
That's cool.
Remember the old days when, on the Three Stooges or the Wild West movies, they'd have a guy and he'd have the thing on the tripod and he'd put a black hood over his head and say, watch the birdie. And this, this is, you could almost do that, put a hood over your head, and because now you're seeing a full frame rendition of the picture.
Well, and that the point was made is when have you ever been able to take the video with the same view as it will be consumed?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so as a result, I think it is a remarkable experience for a videographer or a photographer. And then you add to that this has got LTE, which is really fast, and you've got great software on it. I think that in some ways the camera might be, to me, the most exciting part of this. I really like
it. So
that's
I know the innards. Go ahead, Joanna.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I say that's interesting because I just finished writing my review. I've written a number of pieces on the iPad this past week, and I wanted to take some time and write the review. So the review will be up tomorrow. But I come to the conclusion, and I don't want to, I mean, it's the conclusion everyone else has come to, which is really that the screen is the biggest part, but that other biggest improvement is the camera. But I'm not sure a lot of people buy a new iPad for a camera. But It's funny. I've been hearing that a few people just don't really see the improvement in the screen.
It's not as dramatic as I expected it to be.
Playing the role of John C. Dvorak, mm-hmm. I will step in and say...
What do you think? Are you seeing it for the first time? What do you think?
This is the first moment I've laid eyes on. I know exactly what the specs are. I know everything about it. And that expression that you just had there...
That's your opinion?
I don't know. The camera function's cool. Am I going to use this? I'm a video creator. Am I going to run around and make videos on this and send them off via LTE? No.
No.
Because I can't depend on it. Is this cool? If I didn't have one, yeah. If I was upgrading from one, maybe. Is this going to make me upgrade from two? Absolutely not.
Here's some video that I shot.
Yeah, that's the ending.
Very good video.
Wow, okay, that looks cool.
Yeah.
it's nice.
It's very... This is walking around. The other thing is it's a little more stable because of its size than a little mini camera or your smartphone.
Right. Yeah.
It's nice that they're incrementally improving the product, but I'm with Becky. I'm not going to upgrade from an iPad 2 to get this device.
Iterative, not innovative. And the teardown was interesting that... Big battery, huge battery in
there.
They
went to 45 watt hours from 25.
Yeah.
And you need to, obviously, for LTE. I think that's more for LTE than it is for the screen, although we don't know. It's got a much faster processor and a much, of course, more dense screen.
But I was wondering, in the Wi-Fi only versions, do you get a boost then?
Yeah. You know? I'm actually, I'm in the corner of my apartment right now running a battery test. I'm running the same HD video on both the iPad 2 and the iPad 3. And I expect that the iPad 2 will last probably a little bit longer or around the same amount of time as the iPad. And I have LTE off, the new iPad. I have LTE off just running on Wi-Fi because I expect that the screen, they've boosted the battery just to give you just as much as you would get on Wi-Fi and on the iPad 2 because of the screen.
Yeah, I think we're saying, so it's not the LTE then, it is the screen that's sucking all that juice. All right, well, that makes sense.
Right. Say you'll get an hour less with LTE on.
Right.
So they boosted the battery just to compensate enough for that screen.
Wow. So I was completely wrong. It is the screen that's sucking all that juice. Huh. LTE is notorious for being a battery hog, but that's 10% more. If it's only 1 hour, that's going from 10 hours to 9 hours. That's not a huge...
Not bad.
One more point on the teardown. $499 retail price, estimated cost to build it $316. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it's more than the old one, but that's a decent profit margin.
Yeah.
I think Apple would like more, but of course, I'm sure they make more if you buy the LTE or you buy more RAM.
Right. Yeah. No.
Also in the teardown, we're finding that it has, the A5. I guess we knew everything else. So it's really the battery size that's new information.
It didn't seem like there were any shockers on
Nothing
suppliers.
Nothing shocking. A5X in there and so forth.
No, the funny thing was...
I think they also found that there was 1 gig of RAM, which Apple hadn't confirmed.
Same thing with the Apple TV. It's now 512 instead of 256. They doubled the RAM there, too. And Apple never talks about RAM, which is part of this post-PC strategy. We shouldn't have to talk about that stuff.
The specs aren't the issue. It's just about performance.
Can it work? Does it do it?
Qualitative, not quantitative. The funny thing about this release is, before I went on vacation, I went out and recorded for my Yahoo show all the wraps for the new announcement. So it was... The new iPad's here. The iPad 3
this
is here.
Before they said, you didn't know. iPad HD. You had to go through all the names.
The iPad HD is here. And then I did
Were you smart enough to say just iPad?
Know? Yes, I did the new iPad. I was so stoked. And then this is, the best one was the A5X, is that had come out. Every single thing that was out was almost uniformly
There were no surprises.
Correct. It was absolutely as predicted.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. You should have let me know, because that would have really helped with search placement if we had all known the name.
Next time
it's
I will
so
bring
funny
my...
because I kept calling it the iPad 3 or the iPad HD, and that was just totally wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Need to call it the iPad 3, because if you just say the iPad, it's ambiguous, especially since Apple still sells the iPad 2.
But going back to your spec point, they want it to be qualitative,
That's
not
right.
quantitative.
That's
so
right.
New is good enough.
It's all just the iPad.
I wish they had called it the iPad New. It rhymes so well with iPad 2.
iPad new. But then what happens next year? The iPad not so
new?
Next.
Newer.
The next new.
Newest.
What do you think, Denise? Is this this strikes me as a strange choice.
It does. I can't tell you. They didn't consult with me, so.
It's certainly the stock market didn't mind. The price broke $600 this week for the first time ever. Again, Apple, the most valuable company in the world. based on stock price.
Don't you just keep saying it can't keep going up? I feel foolish for having such negativity about the possibility. And then at some point, everyone's going to go, okay, it can go, sky's the limit, whatever, $1 trillion, no problem.
That's what they're talking about now. They're what is it, $700 billion they're worth now? They're saying, you know, we could be worth $1 trillion. I remember when Apple was stoked, this is how old I am, because they were a $2 billion company.
Wow.
I remember when we were talking about stock price on Mac Break Weekly, we said, well, it might hit 200, but it sure won't go much higher than that. And Scott Bourne was saying, it'll go higher. It could go to 250. And I thought, you're crazy.
So now you raised an interesting point that Mike Elgin said that the next generation of Bluetooth on this device is actually a big deal.
Oh. Yeah,
can someone explain that to me? Everyone's like, the Bluetooth 4.0 is amazing. That's the big deal. I know nothing.
Is it? Yeah. Is it? I haven't tried it yet. Is it? I mean, how do you really use Bluetooth on a tablet?
Well, for keyboards.
Ah.
Keyboards.
Or for
exactly.
your car, I suppose.
True.
You have a Ford.
You could have that synced.
CNET saying it's a game changer.
Yeah.
The first Bluetooth smart ready device, allowing it to connect with the billions of Bluetooth devices and the next generation. That's the issue. It's the next generation, I guess. Yeah, I know. That Silverlight just never. I never can keep it quite up to date, can I?
So apparently CNBC right now is announcing or reporting that Apple's going to make an announcement tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. about the company's cash balance.
Yeah.
They say this is breaking.
Yes, this is breaking news. And I was just about to say it. The question is, what would the announcement be?
The dividend?
Yeah. They have $100 billion. They were expected, or it was hoped by some, I think, at the stockholders meeting that they would offer a dividend. And, of course, they didn't. They've never offered a dividend.
It's got to be.
You think it's a dividend, or you're going to announce that they're going to buy the planet Earth? Or maybe just Italy. Well, they could just buy Italy.
Okay.
Tim Cook could say, you know, I've always loved Italy. I love the food. I love the wine. I love the people. Let's just buy Italy.
Right. That would make obvious sense.
We could call it Appley.
Okay.
I'm just Napoli. Saying.
Appley. To rival Italy.
In Appley, in olden days.
I'm gonna back into the This American Life story with beep, this little point.
Beep, oh.
Yes, back it up.
Beep,
beep. So here's the deal. There's a story that we'll talk much about, which is This American Life retracting the
episode we can talk about
they
it right
did
now.
About yeah. Apple and the Apple factories. But the last act of the episode talking about this thing said that Apple could build their devices in the U.S., the iPhone, for $60 more.
That was the study that came out about a year ago. People might say, oh, it's going to be twice as much, right. Or it's going to be, it's not a significant difference. So, because they only pay about $5 to the workers in China to make that device.
Right.
So they pay $65 to U.S. workers, done.
And the supply chain is commoditized that it's, you know, labor isn't that much of a big deal in terms of changing it. So my crazy out there is Apple's building factories in the U.S. and they're going to...
$100 billion, that'd build a few factories. And you know what? That would be great PR.
That would be great.
That would be...
And I hope she's right.
It's so outrageous. I'm so wrong, but that's just like my crazy...
No, you know, I love that idea.
That is a great idea.
It's good for America, good for American workers. It solves the problem, this embarrassment with Foxconn. I think you're brilliant. Let's do it.
There is a problem.
Yeah.
There is a problem.
There aren't enough workers.
No, it's the supply chain.
It's getting the stuff into China. China.
It's the flexibility. This was the point they made in the episode.
It's just-in-time manufacturing.
Yeah. It's like, hey, guys, down the street in, you know, Screw Factory or... That didn't come out right. In Glass...
There's a factory for that?
in Glass Factory or... you know, Bracket Factory. Can you make 50 million more of these and get them to us by tomorrow?
Well, they might have to, you know what? They might have to build some of those factories here.
So anyways, that's my kooky end around that. I think that's my wild idea or a dividend, but.
I like the idea of building factories.
Yeah.
That's a win everywhere. Now, remember Steve Jobs, when he went to that famous dinner, it's talked about in the Walter Isaacson biography with Mark Zuckerberg and many other tech, Silicon Valley luminaries. The one thing that Jobs brought up with Obama is, you know, there's too many regulations for me to build a factory here. But remember, in the early days of Apple, they did make Macintoshes here. They did make Apple IIs here. This is a more recent development offshore the manufacture. Yeah. Steve was very proud of the next factory where they built the cube.
Right.
built here in America.
Designed in California was weird. I mean, that's great. That's right. Super. But I prefer made in America. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, designed in California, made by slaves in China, doesn't have the same ring to it.
No.
Somehow.
No.
So, okay, I'm going to, this is going to get crazy. We're going to take a break. I'm going to circle back on this Bluetooth, and then we'll talk about the This American Life thing, because it is kind of an interesting story, maybe a little bit of a journalistic story. And then I also have a question for Denise, because we had the weirdest question on the radio show today, and it raised a fascinating legal issue. What if your neighbor had a Wi-Fi access point with a name that was so horribly offensive that you couldn't browse your Wi-Fi because it would, and when people came over to visit, you'd have to say, "I'm so sorry, we have a horrible neighbor." And what if that happened, and what would you do? We'll answer that question in a second.
That's a tease.
That's a tease, baby. But we want to also say hello to, is that Josh over there? How are you? Good to see you. It's Tech TV Week here at the Twit Brick House. Good to see you, Josh. This show brought to you by our friends at Citrix, makers of GoToMeeting. Have you ever been to a GoToMeeting meeting? Oh, you got to try it. It's amazing. First of all, they've added to it. You know, GoToMeeting is the original screen sharing online meeting application. It's just fantastic. If you've not tried it, you've got to try it for that alone. But now they've added high-def video. So this is actually a brilliant move. It is a conference call as well as screen sharing all tied together. And if you try it on the new iPad, you're going to be blown away by the quality of the images you see here, because, of course, you're getting this great video. Yes, you can share your picture from the iPad camera. You see she's doing it right there. It supports the touch. Of course, it works not just on the iPad, but it works on Macs, PCs, iPhones, Android devices as well. I want you to try it free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com right now, GOTOMeeting.com. Actually, when you get there, there's a big orange try it free button. Click that and use our offer code TWIT for 30 days free. Then get the free app for iPad or iPhone and try a GoToMeeting with the HD Faces video. It's really spectacular. Free for 30 days. GoToMeeting.com. You got a meeting coming up? Blow them away. You know, we do regular meetings now. We're doing a site redesign for the radio show. We do regular meetings. They call them scrums. There's this whole agile development thing, and you have sprints and you have scrums, and it seems too athletic for me. But anyway, the in these meetings, occasionally we want to review wireframes. The company we're working with is a distributed company. Lullabot doesn't have an office. People are in Rhode Island. People are in Minnesota. They're all over the place. So we use GoToMeeting, and we can look at the wireframes together. We can see each other. It's just really fantastic. I want you to try it. GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the offer code TWIT. And we thank Citrix for their support of This Week in Tech. So Bluetooth 4, the whole point of it, apparently, according to Bluetooth.com, is it's low energy. So you can have Bluetooth devices that operate for a long time. They say months or years on the little lithium coin batteries. So healthcare, sports, you know, fitness applications, mm-hmm. security, home entertainment. You could have a security camera that has this little battery in it and then uses Bluetooth to connect.
Well,
so
I think
that's what 4.0 is. And it was just announced in July. I mean, it's brand new.
And, you know, this week we also saw ARM unveiling their low-power chip that has, you know, they're saying up to a year. It's going to extend devices up to a year of battery
Forget
life.
Forget 10 hours. I want a year.
Right. Well, I mean, it's this whole Internet of Things idea.
Right.
And not only just creating them to be Wi-Fi, Internet, mesh networks within your home all radiating around a device. And, gee, what would that device be?
Do you have the Nike Fuel? No, you have diamonds.
Oh, yeah.
Never mind.
New.
You know who has it? Sarah got it at South by Southwest. I bet Joanna has one.
I do have it. I'm not wearing it right now. It's on the other side.
What do you think? Compared to the Up, what do you think?
Well, I actually never tested the Up, and I'm kind of happy about that.
Yeah, that was a debacle.
So many problems.
They actually pulled it off the market. Yeah.
I wore it at South by Southwest, and I couldn't believe how much I'd walked. But I'm not a real fitness guru. But
Becky Worley.
I love the Fitbit. The Fitbit was fabulous.
Fitbit has more features than the Fuel. Mm-hmm. But the Fuel does something mm-hmm. interesting. It gives you this magic fuel points that are based on a variety of things. So that's proprietary. They're smart. It's proprietary. Mm-hmm. It's not calories. Anybody can do calories. Right. This is fuel.
Right.
And so by doing that, they kind of, they own it a little bit more.
The thing I'm waiting for that is like everything else in this fitness category bores the hell out of me until they get the device that tells me my calorie consumption.
Yeah. And your blood pressure and your heart rate. It should just stick right there in your neck.
Yeah.
And just be a little probe, just a little, it's a slight prick.
Excuse me.
Just a little prick.
This is
prick.
The women's show.
Just a tiny prick.
Keep your references
an
away.
Itty, teeny, weeny.
I'm
going
to start writing these all down. Over
and
here.
Then it goes right in your throat.
Minus
or
one.
I guess it could go in your buttocks.
No, we shall
one.
Not discuss where
would
that.
Be, well, where would be the best place if you were going to measure all that?
It would have to be sort of like maybe one of these kind of
bands
here. But you know, I remember when you had got that Y thing scale and you started tweeting your weight and I was like, that's insane. And now I live and die off the Y thing scale because it tracks your weight. It also works with my Zio. So
I have a Y thing's blood pressure cuff. So I tweet my blood pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's excellent. Excellent.
It's a little bit exhibitionistic. I don't know if it's a really, I think it's a kind of an abnormal thing to do.
If you're, it's the quantification of your personal life. I mean, there's much to be
said. I tried to get Kelly Ripa to do it, and she wouldn't step on the scale.
Yeah. I mean, I think this Bluetooth thing is a big deal because basically what it comes down to is it's all about battery life. If you have devices that are constantly searching and you get longer battery life once that that radio mellows out a little bit, then I think that's going to be a big deal.
Well, I've said for a long time, we're making all of these improvements in these devices and there's been very few breakthroughs in batteries.
Yeah.
And somebody was saying, I was on The Verge somewhere, that these new phones are going to be starting to be less than 6 or 7 hours. That's not going to make it.
Right.
So that's stopping innovation completely in its tracks.
And it's not just in gadgets. I mean, this is the inhibitor for, obviously, electric cars. It's the size and the capacity and the refresh. What do you use to describe how it takes less charge every time?
I don't know.
That thing in terms of batteries with cars. So I'm with you.
Is that true that in the lithium-ion battery packs in electric cars, you cannot you're actually losing capacity each time?
I don't know certainly, but I know that that's, as far as I know,
that's
universal
terrible.
To batteries.
That's terrible.
Don't know how it plays out in cars, so I will you know, I'm sure about everything, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut for just a moment.
I think it's pretty much a cliff effect. You're right. It might be a small amount, but I think it's pretty much after 500 charges, it just stops working.
Yeah.
As opposed to like slowly degrading.
Battery degradation, the chat room says.
Or attrition.
Ooh.
For a more militaristic. Denise Howell.
I get this call.
Adriana calls me from Scottsdale, Arizona. She says, my neighbor has a really horrible name for their Wi-Fi access point. And every time I pull it up, I'm so embarrassed. And people come over and, you know, my mom wants to use the Wi-Fi. And I give her the name, but she's, you know, you see it in the drop-down menu. You can't avoid it. There it is. I don't know. And I couldn't get her to say it on the air. She probably couldn't say it on the air. And I said, you've talked to your neighbor. She said, yeah. They said, no, we're not going to change it. She went to the Homeowners Association. And I don't think it's in the C&C. It's not, you know, it's not in the contract. You can't put up an antenna. You can't paint your house purple, but you can have a foul name Wi-Fi access point. Is there any legal recourse?
I can't think of any kind of legal recourse for that. It becomes a speech issue, right?
Yeah.
It's something you're broadcasting that has some meaningful content to you, I suppose. If they're not going to take it down, it does. It becomes a question of what sort of public speech is
well? Good Sound said it's
in that location.
It's an FCC issue. She can get the FCC to find them.
So it becomes like Janet Jackson's nipple.
Yeah,
yeah.
In fact, for all I know, that's actually the name of it. It's Janet Jackson's nipple.
I'm dying to know the name that's now. The name of the
show. Yeah, don't you want to know?
SSID malfunction.
Anyway, don't do that. Folks, yeah. But
we actually had a funny discussion on Twill. I was trying to pull up exactly the names of the networks in question, but I think it was triggered. I was in an airport and was surfing for the way to connect, and there was an SSID available that was like, "We will hack you blind," or just something.
Right, you know, those are good.
Threatening, and
Mashable had an article Mashable's favorite Wi-Fi names. They actually asked people to write in. Police Surveillance Van 2. Use this one, Mom.
That's good.
Abraham right. Linksys.
Oh, that's, I'm looking at one on HuffPo. I'm under your bed.
I'm in the house. Please bring vodka to apartment 1310.
This is good. I'll use the nice one. Your dog poops in my yard.
Maybe that's what it is.
That's a public service.
Yeah.
That's preventing violence.
All of your bandwidth belong to us. Anyway, I have a feeling this is a 21st century issue.
It's passive aggressive neighbor to neighbor.
Well, they always said good fences. Good fences make good neighbors.
You bring up homeowners associations and CCNRs. I mean, that would certainly be
that one on
a
air.
Starting point. You know, there are some things that are not okay in gated communities that would be okay on a public street.
This is a good one. Tell us this one.
The best one so far. Your baby is really ugly.
That's not passive aggressive. That's aggressive aggressive. Wow.
Mine's not welcome.
No.
Wow. No. But you live, Joanna, you live in the city. I mean, there's probably 1,000 Wi-Fi access points whenever you...
There are. There really are.
What are you doing?
None of these are all that interesting.
Are you taking a picture? Oh, you're looking at your neighbors.
Yeah.
They're nice.
I think we're actually, and I bet you that our audience will be the first to notice this, but we're actually getting to a point where there are too many Wi-Fi access points. You know, there's 11 bands, but there's really only 3 effective bands. There's kind of high, medium, and low. And if you get a lot of traffic in any of those bands, we actually have it here. The reason I'm aware of this in the Twit Brick House, because we have so many Wi-Fi access points in Pixel Core, which shares our space, does that we have a lot of collisions. We can't find free space. We are completely occupying the 2.4 gigahertz range. And I suspect that this is going to be, I mean, Joanna, how many do you see there? 20 different Wi-Fi access points? A ton of them, right? In any major city, it's a lot.
So, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19,
wow.
20, 21.
21. The thing is, they're really only three bands. And so if they're all nearby and strong, what you're going to get, and by the way, this is one of the reasons why we tell people not to use Wi-Fi and Skype, is you're going to get
this. One of the reasons
And you've already experienced it. You dropped out. And it's because of all these collisions.
Have you used this Wi-Fi stumbler that tells you what channel all your neighbors are on? And
yeah. And I use one on an Android Wi-Fi analyzer. And it's very useful. You know, it's funny, when the cable guy came into my house to install the cable, I had a couple of routers out. I had a new Apple AirPort Extreme, and I had a Linksys router they'd sent me. And the cable guy even said, "You're not going to use that Linksys, are you?" I said, "Well, no, I was going to use the Apple." He said, "Oh, yeah, use the Apple. It's much better." I said, "Well, it ought to be. It's 4 times more expensive."
Joke, right?
I'm using a Linksys. That's another problem,
How's that working for you?
You see me right now?
Yeah. True.
So what is the availability on the iPad? It seems like, has anybody, I know if you order online, it says 2 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. But I think you can walk into an Apple store today and just say, I'll take one, right?
And Walmart is one.
Walmart?
Yeah.
Target? Have you done that recently?
I haven't been hearing about any sellouts in New York, at least.
So does that mean, it means one of two things. Either Apple learned and they started making them earlier, or the demand is lighter.
Right. And I mean, I'm hoping we hear some numbers on this call tomorrow morning, but it seems like this is really going to be about their financial standing. So it should be interesting to hear when they announce some numbers.
I can't. So we have to get up on the, it's a 9 a.m. call in New York. We have to get up at 6 a.m. here in California. Apple's done this to us twice now.
Hey, I can do it with you because I'm going to be talking about how to exercise your way through your housework at 4 a.m.
On GMA. You do those live.
Oh, yeah.
She does them live.
Yeah.
So. From your house via Skype.
Yeah. My dread fear is my kids will wake up in the middle of my live shot and walk out. Mommy!
Now I'd like to show you how I get exercise by beating my children.
Get away. Auntie Robin and Uncle George do not want to talk to you.
Oh, that's Stephanopoulos. He's such a taskmaster. Lenovo has announced, and this is from The Verge. Do you miss The Verge a little bit, Joanna? Come on, tell me.
I do miss them, but they're all great guys, and I see them very frequently.
I had
breakfast this morning with Nilay Patel himself.
Oh, I love Nilay. He's so great.
Keeping in touch with everyone.
Good.
Now, can I ask one quick question? Was the design of the Verge website done in conjunction with Windows 8?
It is a tablet design, isn't it?
I mean, it is uncanny.
No.
Go back to the Metro.
I'm not going
to
comment on this, but look at that. No, I'm going to say no.
Okay, I just wondered if it was just me who was making this observation.
That's a really interesting point.
Yeah, I see the tile type of effect.
Well, the colors.
Tiles are hot right now. Tiles are hot.
We were in production way before Microsoft previewed their Windows 8.
Right.
I feel like that's a comment.
Right.
But yeah, it is.
That's a prepared comment.
It is.
That's all right. Wait till we talk about the Yahoo story. I'll be awfully quiet.
Yeah. Because you're still doing stuff for them?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll talk about that. So Lenovo says they, according to The Verge, are going to be the first to market with a Windows 8 tablet. Michael Dell said, well, that's what's weird because it says Lenovo, but then the first sentence is Michael Dell says he'll have an enterprise tablet the exact day Windows 8 ships. But Lenovo is also saying,
I don't mean to call Sean, who wrote this article, is a great reporter. But, you know, I want to say that all the major PC manufacturers will have Windows 8 tablets and PCs the first day that Windows 8 is available.
You'd be crazy not to. You've got a little bit of lead time.
Microsoft has done that with almost every release.
Yeah.
If you think back to Windows 7, there were Halo products that were announced that same day Steve Ballmer took stage here in New York and said, Windows 7 is available now. Look at these brand new PCs.
Right.
And also corresponds well with the refresh cycle for a lot of these PC manufacturers.
In fact,
I believe Lenovo will have one of the first.
In fact, PC manufacturers they live for this time. Sales go through the roof when there's a new version of Windows. They would love Microsoft to do what Apple does and release one every year. In fact, Microsoft kind of implied that they are going to start doing that, starting with Windows 8. And I'm sure that that's driven somewhat by the hardware market that says, please. You know, they practically put the hardware market out of business with Vista because it was so delayed. And these companies knew every business is waiting for the new operating system and they're not buying new hardware.
Yeah, but consumers are only buying every other year because we all know the every other release cycle from Microsoft is a dud. The odd year, the odd release.
TikTok is actually everywhere. Intel says we do a TikTok. Apple's obviously doing a TikTok with its iPhone. The 4 was a big revolution. 4S incremental. 5 probably big revolution. That makes sense because you got 2-year contracts with the cell phone companies, at least in the U.S. It's different internationally. Those darn foreigners, they ruin everything.
I think it's interesting. You see all these major manufacturers and their CEOs saying, Windows 8, Windows 8. So you've got Lenovo, whoever this source is right now. You've had Meg Whitman saying the same thing for HP. You've seen Michael Dell saying it now for Dell. I mean, all of these guys, Asus has also said it, that they're like the number one partner for Windows 8 when it comes to ARM. So they're all going to have stuff that day or if not that week at Best Buy or wherever they launch their products.
And I think the TikTok cycle does not work with Windows this time because Windows 7 was absolutely the best version of Windows to date. Mm-hmm. And Windows 8 is the most major refresh of Windows since Windows 95. I mean, this is a huge
reinvention. So I saw it at CES, thought it looked great, got it, understand why it's going to be a big deal. And what I'm really curious about is, have you guys seen it in tablet form and played with it in tablet form?
But the developer preview, not the consumer preview yet.
So, okay, here's my big question, because everyone's talking about the iPad as a creative tool. The iPad, create with it. Phil Schiller's up there saying, you can create. I call total BS until they get application switching under control. It's a debacle on the iPad for me. Mm-hmm. When I'm creating and I'm moving between applications on the iPad, I find it absolutely laborious. Will Windows 8 in tablet form get application switching or multitasking down in a format that is better than the iPad?
They already do.
Yeah, they already do. And I actually wrote this in my review that will be coming up tomorrow. And I'm trying to figure out how to drop in my link to my preview of the consumer preview someplace.
Are you in the chat room, Joanna? Because you could put it there and I'll see it there. If you're not, don't try to get in the chat room. You could tweet it.
There we go.
There you go.
Did it go through?
I'll see.
So I took a very deep look at the consumer preview on a tablet that Microsoft sent me before it came out. And the application switching is one of the things I love the most, and what I actually wrote in my iPad review, is that I hope when they do the software update later this year, because that's sort of the schedule that Apple's been on, that they do address how apps work side by side and how they sort of address a little bit of the operating system to make it a little bit different than it's looked in the past. And so when you are in Windows 8, you can drag apps in from the left or the right and then adjust how they appear on the side with a little bit of a slider thing. And I just think the way they're doing apps and how they work with each other is pretty amazing.
I agree. You know, basically on the Mac desktop now in Lion, that's how it works. When you go full screen with an app, you can do a three-finger, you could set it to four-finger swipe, and you just slide. It kind of reminds me of the Palm Pre, where you're sliding from card to card.
Right. Cards.
And so this is you hit an interesting point, because
we are
used to the idea of having multiple windows open and being able to context switch programs, even without sliding the screen, just on the same screen. And many of us have now got 27-inch or 30-inch screens for just that reason. So we can have a browser open, a word processor open, and we can cut and paste, or we can go back and forth. And tablets really don't do that. And multitasking is really a myth on devices like this. I don't think you really should even multitask on memory and processor-constrained devices, because you're looking at one thing at a time, and you can context switch. You don't need to fully multitask unless you're listening to Pandora or something. But it is, I think, so you have this issue. You want to operate full screen.
Sorry.
Eileen's
just go with it, LaFleur. Come on. Look at that Aloha shirt. Make it work.
You guys are multitasking right now there.
Go right at it.
If you can.
God, if I could only swipe this window off. What's happening?
It's like the freezing.
What's happening? What happened?
Where's that music coming from? It's not me.
I've got Joanna's article on her Skype.
Oh, and it has a big cotton
ad. It has the big cotton ad right there. So there it is.
It's damn you, ABC! Damn you!
Oh no! Oh, God.
So it's because you sent us in the Skype. Ads. Yeah, you sent us. You sent
by the
link
way,
in the chat.
Purple
Skype chat.
I'm just saying.
Really.
Purple.
Sorry.
She's wearing a purple shirt.
She is.
It's a chick thing.
It is.
See, look at that.
Oh.
Purple.
You got to wear purple on camera. It's like, yeah. I've just invested in like 15 new purple shirts. It's ridiculous.
You know what? I have a bunch of purple too. Purple looks
really
good on camera.
You don't want to see my closet right now.
No, purple's good.
Purple's so, a dance bomb. So thanks for going with it. I appreciate that.
We got dance bombed by the Cotton Council. Anyway, so this is a video review. This is not for TV. This is for the web only?
Yeah, this was web only. And actually, well, they
is this something
some
new that they're going to do?
There's a whole complicated thing. But yes, this is pulled for some of the TV stuff, but it was also on Yahoo, but mostly for web reviews, which is good because we get to do a good mix of length and content, which I'm now working on.
This would be a 2-minute piece on GMA.
Right.
And
I've never gotten them to do a Windows launch.
Right. They would never do this on GMA. But even if they did, it would be for 2 minutes.
Oh, minute 30. Tops.
Minute 30.
That's where Becky and I are going to team up, and we are going to push.
Bring the tech.
So how long is this piece on the web?
I think this actually turned out to be 4 minutes or so. There we go. So that's the app switching right there.
Oh, cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like, what's that thing where you snap? Snap.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
They kind of started that with Windows Vista, actually, Snap. Well, but see, so what I was saying is Lion does this. You can swoop back and forth. And I think that is actually a very nice, natural way to context switch. There will be lots of people who say, but no, I want two windows open side by side so I can look at them. But guess what? The world's moving away from that. It's moving to full screen apps, and it's because of tablets. Yeah. And I guess we'll get used to it.
Yeah, well,
I think they could totally do that on the iPad. You could totally have an app.
Or
does it do it already? Is that that's that new multi-touch? You have to enable the gestures.
Yeah, I was just going to say gestures would be the key.
They have them. You have to enable them. Let me see if they're enabled on mine. I probably didn't. Yeah, multitasking gestures. Use 4 or 5 fingers to pinch to the home screen. Swipe up to reveal the multitasking bar. Swipe left or right between apps. Mm-hmm. So in fact, if I have, see. Look at that. So I am doing that. Huh? It's not easy, but you can do that.
All right. Well, that's definitely a step in the right direction, because I think that the problem with creation in individual apps is that that doesn't reflect how people truly create. It's across many different apps and media sources.
And yet, for novice users, and I think that that's really where the conversation is happening here, is that Microsoft and Apple have both decided that there is a far larger number of neophyte users who don't know how to use computers. For them, it just makes sense. One task at a time, occupy the full screen, have an intimate experience. Then when you want to do something else, go there.
Well, but is it novice or is it that I consider the iPad to be a consumption tool?
I did too. It isn't anymore.
Right.
And that's what to me, iPad 3 changes the game or whatever the
because
hell you
of the
call
camera?
This. Because of the, it's a couple of things.
Voice, because of the camera.
Because of the camera. It's now a creation device. No, look what Apple's done. It's true. iPhoto, and then you see Avid Studio as well as iMovie. That's for sure true. But they've also put voice dictation in, which solves kind of the keyboard issue. Mm. They've added Siri-style voice dictation. Android's had that for a while. It does a very good job. I think you're seeing a lot of apps. It took a while for word processors, spreadsheets, presentation managers to adapt how they think to a touch world. And
are
that
you
was part
do
of the problem.
Are you going to do your taxes
problem. On that? No, of course not. But I don't even do my taxes on anything.
I thought you were going to ask me to do your taxes. Are you going to do your taxes at all? Right.
I have someone to do that.
Alerting
now,
the IRS. Leo
no,
is not
them.
Doing taxes.
I just don't do them. I have somebody.
I have a whole stack of things.
But the person who does it on probably Excel, yes. On a desktop, of course.
Yes. We will not be reinventing the wheel.
No. And Denise, probably in the law, it would be difficult to do pleadings and all that. But on the other hand, you might, instead of bringing a big briefing case to court, you might bring, I guess you couldn't because you have
nobody
to present.
Nobody uses briefcases. We already did this.
You do. The brief. It's a lawyer thing. A brief. They're called briefs, aren't they? Am I wrong?
You're called briefs.
They're called briefs, and you have a case.
Okay.
You put your briefs in the case.
All right. We'll backtrack
on that. Or your
on
shorts,
that.
Whatever you got. You put them in the case, and you take them to court. But, of course, you couldn't do this because how would you enter it in evidence or show it to the other attorney? You need paper.
Oh, no, you'd be stunned at how technological courtrooms are getting and how much things like iPads are used
really?
Or tablet PCs in general. Yeah, are being used to do presentations for juries and the court in general.
That's true. They set up a screen and they had a projector and they had a laptop and they showed movies. And you're right. The last time I was on a trial, you're right. Although there was a lot of, I don't know how this works, bailiff. Yeah. And stuff like that.
There is a lot of that too, yes.
Yeah. But we're
but,
moving.
But I just don't, if none of the app switching improvements convince me that anybody's going to abandon their iPhone or their iPads that they've now come to love over a couple of years.
Right.
Because something's going to app switch a little better.
That's a good point. The consumers have voted.
Mm-hmm.
These things are successful.
Yep.
They are using them.
Are we going to bash NPR or not?
Okay, so
actually,
Mike Daisy, actually, what?
Would it be all right if we went ahead and called another guest?
Yes, actually, we have another guest. I'll tell you what, let's get Matt on the line. While you're getting Matt on the line,
okay.
And then we'll do NPR. Don't let me forget Mike Daisy, because I would love to bash NPR. It's actually not NPR's
fault.
No.
It's Mike Daisy on the line.
Yeah,
that was just throwing the red meat
out. You know, Mike Daisy was a regular in the Screensavers. We know Mike very well.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Mike, but he moved to Seattle, unfortunately. But I'll talk about that. And I think the world of him. He's a great guy. He's very funny.
Oh, I can't wait to hear your
We'll talk about what happened. But first, let's talk about FreshBooks. And then we're going to get Matt Speccarelli on the line. You know that name?
Yes, I do.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
$935 richer.
$835.
Oh, I think it was more than they paid.
Well, let's
more.
Find out. We've got the horse on. And we'll get it from his mouth in
All
a
right.
moment. But first, let's no snickering. First, let's talk about easy online invoicing. If you're a small business, the worst thing is the end of the month because you got to send out invoices. In fact, I always would forget. You agree with me. You're saying it. You're saying it is, right?
I thought you were saying something about the end of the month and it being a women show. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
We weren't going there. Joanna Stern.
FreshBooks is definitely not going to be happy with this. Go
it's
on.
Fresh.
Go on.
Please forgive my younger colleague at ABC.
You'll be springtime fresh with FreshBooks. Online invoicing for those special times of the month. The last 5 days of the month.
No.
It's the worst time because you have to do your invoices.
I get headaches.
And if you get headaches, you get cranky.
You
get bloated.
To have a lot of chocolate during those times.
You eat a lot of chocolate because it's these dang invoices. But here's the problem. If you don't send them out, what happens?
Oh, it's a mess.
It's a mess. You don't get paid.
Oh.
And I.
Oh, yeah.
What were you thinking? You don't get paid. And this is the problem I have because I used to not. I used to put it off.
Oh,
and then 6 months later, I'd invoice the company. I said, well, you crazy? I'm not going to pay you for something 6 months ago. You got to send them out regularly. So FreshBooks does this so nicely. They you do it via email. You're very professional. You upload your logo and everything. So it's a real invoice. And what happens is there's a button on the email that says pay him now. And I'll tell you, most clients will do that because it's not that they don't want to pay you right away. It's just as much a pain for them as it was for you invoicing. They put it off. So this way, they click the button. They can use a credit card. They can use PayPal, or I think there's 11 online payment services they can choose from. And you get paid faster. You can even automate this whole process if you want, if your client wants, so that you, the invoicing is automatic, the payment is automatic. If you do time and hours, they have apps on the iPhone, and they have a web app that will automatically take the time and hours and put it in the invoice, send it out. Ticklers, if you don't get paid right away, 30, 60, 90-day ticklers, they send the email back out automatically. This is why 3.5 million people are using FreshBooks.com. It's just fantastic. And now you can try it free for 30 days. Unlimited use, as many invoices as you want for 30 days. But incidentally, you can have these. There are old-fashioned clients who want paper invoices. They will, for an additional fee, print it, stamp it, and mail it as well. So it does the whole thing. Your accountants will love you when it comes around this time of year. And it's tax time, and all of this stuff is there and easy and exportable. It's just so fantastic. FreshBooks.com. Sign up right now. You get 30 days of unlimited use, all the features, multiple clients, multiple staff, everything. No limits, just FreshBooks.com. If they ask, and they may not, but if they ask, if you do me a favor and mention that you heard this on Twit, I would be very grateful. FreshBooks. Easy online invoicing. FreshBooks.com.
Leo, the chat room has a question.
Yes.
That special offer?
Yes.
Any strings attached?
We've decided to create a string-free FreshBooks.
Got it. Okay. Second chair. I'm just representing the needs of the chat room.
That was amazing.
Don't blame the chat room, Morley. You know you thought that
Curtis
one up.
Curtis B., you know it was you. I had your back, Holmes.
Oh, my God. I think I just did a Tampax ad. I didn't even know.
Yep. Yeah, pretty sure you
did. I didn't even know.
I'm very sorry. I apologize to the viewers. I'm new on the show.
No, we love it. Just take off your top and everything will be fine.
Oh.
All right. So moving on. That didn't go over so well,
not
that line.
So well.
Could you edit that part out? Thank you. I tried. I really did. I was going to be good this whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And then Morley started
mm-hmm.
it. It's all her fault. Mike Daisy is a monologist.
Wait a minute.
Do we have Matt on the line?
I think we might. Matt?
Matt, are you there? There
he
is.
Yeah,
there he
is. I'm here.
So Matt is a modern-day hero, ladies and gentlemen. A Robin Hood, a man who takes from the rich and puts it in his pocket. Matt, what did you do?
I sued AT&T, and that's not the big story. The big story is that I beat him.
He took him to small claims court. Matt's the guy you probably read about who a couple of weeks ago had his day in court bitching that AT&T had throttled him because he'd exceeded. It was what? How many gigabytes had you used?
The last month, I was about 1.7-ish.
Oh.
Between 1.5 and 2 is when I got slowed down.
Appalling. So
yeah.
he said, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. And you decided to take it to court.
Yeah. That's exactly what happened. And, you know, it turned out good for me, I guess.
You know, you told us on the radio show, but if you don't mind repeating it a little bit, the judge seemed to be, he was kind of leaning your way.
Yeah, at first he wasn't. I mean, it was definitely an argument, definitely a case that we had to fight with each other about with the judge. But towards the end of the conversation, that's when I realized it was going my way. Because he took the time to give us both a lecture about how justice actually happens in small claims court, where, you know, you don't get all the litigation and the attorney's fees. It's one time going to the clerk's office, filling out some paperwork that takes less than 10 minutes. And before you leave, you have a court date. And I mean, it's quick justice. It's simple. It's very cost effective. And you get it done real quick.
So did AT&T send a guy? I mean, they can't use a lawyer.
That's correct. They sent the area representative who manages seven of the local stores. And I assume that, he's got to be taught what to do. They had a paralegal helping them. And he did bring up some good points, but, some of his points just didn't make any sense to the judge.
So the judge said, you know what? You're right. Awarded you $85 per month for the 10 months. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, they in small claims, they can't do injunctive relief, which is getting the policy changed, which is the whole idea. So they can only give you your damages. So he said, what's your average? I said, about 10 gigs. And how much is left on your contract? 10 months. So he asked me how much it would cost. I said, it's about $100 because $10 a gig. And the AT&T guy said, well, he's already paying for a certain many under his plan of unlimited. So he called it 65. The AT&T representative called it 65. I called it 100. The judge says I'm putting it at 85. That's in the middle. That's fair. $85 times 10 months is $850.
AT&T, did they throw a little hissy fit? Did they go,
I wish I could have remembered what the guy did. I was so happy that I won, and all I saw was his behind as he left the door of the courtroom.
He stomped three times and disappeared in a greasy puff of smoke.
He disappeared so quick. There was a guy there trying to get his name and information. No.
Oh, yeah, you were smart because you called the AP before your day in court, right? You had a reporter there.
Yeah, I was really just trying to do some research because I kept reading these stories, and I wanted some advice and help and maybe learn some of the terminology. Like backhaul and HSPA plus, which now that I've learned, so I sent some emails and feelers, and the guy from the AP called me back, before court. So I said, "Yeah, I already got a court date," and he's like, "Well, can we send someone down?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure.
Why not?"
I didn't think it was going to be this huge story that it became.
You're a cause célèbre. So AT&T said we're appealing.
Yeah, that's what they said.
But they didn't.
No, Friday they sent me a check. It was planned out really well, I think, because my attorney was telling me that he had a conversation with their representation. And before I even got off the phone with him, I got a call from the Associated Press saying, hey, did you check your mail? we hear that they mailed you a check today. And I said, no, they couriered it over because they wanted it in before 5 on Friday. And I think they do that because of the news cycle. So,
right. Right. So I want to, if I could, I would give you a high five.
Nice.
So, couple of questions. What are you going to spend the money on?
I was thinking about that. I think I'm just going to give it to a nonprofit thing called For the Need.
That's great.
Let them, $850 is not going to make or break me. And it wasn't about their money anyway. So, For the Need, they can definitely use it.
Aren't you a good guy? Are they still throttling you, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, they're still throttling me, and, it's a pain in the butt. But, and a lot of people bring up this whole tethering issue, Oh, well, he was stealing from AT&T because he tethered his phone.
Well, didn't you get a cease and desist from them?
No. What, to stop tethering?
Yeah.
Well, no, what they did is they said, we caught you tethering, so they switched me to a tiered plan for 1 month.
Yeah.
And during that tiered plan, I used the least amount of data and it cost me the most amount of money.
Yeah, of course.
And that was a good piece of evidence in court.
Oops.
Because I showed the judge. I'm like, look, this is costing me more money on a tiered plan. But I complained to AT&T and they actually changed me back to unlimited. I said, okay, all right, fine. I won't do it anymore as long as this court thing is going on.
So we had the story on TNT, and maybe we got this wrong. That they had said we could change all this if you just shut up.
Okay, no, they sent me a letter, and they were claiming that I reached out to them, and I said, no, they contacted me about a settlement talk. So what happened was a paralegal before court, the day before court, sent me a letter saying, basically, you better drop your case because you don't stand a chance. And that came at 4:30 p.m. the day before court. After I won in court, I waited a couple days, let things kind of cool down, and I called her up, and she took my call because she didn't recognize the phone number, I guess. And I just simply asked her two questions. I said, are you going to pay me or are you going to appeal? If you're not going to appeal, when can I get a check? She said that the corporate department is handling it now. She's got nothing to do with it. But after I get a judgment, to email her a copy of it, and she would put me in touch with whom I could ask those questions to. So I did that, and then I called her two or three times and sent at least two, maybe three emails, and she never responded to me. So I said, okay, well, I'm just going to have to wait and see what time brings, if they're going to appeal or not.
Right.
Because just because they told the press doesn't mean they're going to. So after that, I was just going to let it lie, and then I got a call from Mr. Jason Frank, of Egan Avenetti, which is a prestigious law firm that does nothing but class action lawsuits and huge litigation.
Oh, they would like you to start a class. So
when he told me that he was hired by AT&T to represent them in this case, it one said to me that they're no longer using their legal department. They're going to outside counsel. And he asked me if I was represented, and at the time I wasn't. And he starts saying, yeah, I asked him the same questions. I'm like, when do I get a check? And are you guys going to appeal? And he says, listen, anytime we talk to anybody about any kind of case that's pending, it's customary for a mutual non-disclosure agreement.
A mutual non-disclosure agreement.
And I said, okay.
Wait a minute, let me ask your counsel here. Denise Howell, is that typical?
Oftentimes, especially when you're dealing with a big company like AT&T, if they're going to settle a case like this, they are going to want you to agree not to talk about it. And those agreements generally are mutual.
Okay.
Denise, I have a quick question for you.
Yeah, but as long as you got your counsel here, go ahead.
And I have a question for you, too. So let's fire him back and forth.
Okay. Do they usually require you to sign one after you've won a judgment? Because I figured the settlement talks are supposed to happen before the judgment is done.
Oftentimes, settlements happen after you get a determination in your favor because...
But can't you just... You already won, though.
They probably wouldn't have even talked to you without that determination in your favor, right? So now you at least have some leverage and they're going to come to the table.
Yeah, they didn't reach out to me a single time. I mean, I sent my demand letter 30 days in advance, just like the contract says. And I called customer service and asked them if they had a legal department and how I could get in touch with them. And they said, no, there isn't. I called the executive resolution team, and I actually spoke to someone there, and she's the reason why I decided to file it. But yeah, no one ever reached out to me. I was always the one doing the calling.
Right.
And then when they give me this letter, and here's the thing, I told them I would absolutely sign that thing. Let me run it by a friend of mine who's an attorney because I don't know about these things, because he was talking about the mutual non-disclosure agreement, and it's a little over my head. I mean, I think I can handle small claims, but, you know, the attorney guy has definitely got one up on me. So when I gave it to my friend and we read it together, all that stuff about, hey, we can terminate your service and all this didn't need to be in that letter.
Mm-hmm.
And my intention was, hey, yeah, let's sign it and see what they have to say. I mean, maybe they're going to offer me a ton more money just to shut up. But When they threw in the threat with it, it was like, okay, that just way put me over the edge.
You tweeted.
Right, and the presentation in your case is a little bit different. I mean, if you're going to settle a case, that's where the agreement to keep things confidential usually comes in as part and parcel of the settlement. An NDA in advance is a little bit unusual.
And he won, right? So
yeah, exactly.
Here's the tweet. Looks like AT&T is threatening to cut off my service if I don't sign a confidentiality agreement to talk about settling. I thought I won.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let me ask you this, Matt.
I just
would love to be able to sit down like we're sitting down with you with the fellow that AT&T sent, and I'm sure we're not going to have the chance to do that. But when that person was there, did he attempt to make the argument on AT&T's behalf that you actually still were receiving unlimited service and limited data, just at a throttled amount?
Absolutely did. And I'll also read you this real quick thing. It says 1.3 in their contract. This is I don't know if you could see this very well, but this is what he brought to court.
That's the contract.
I
read that, sure.
It's double-sided pages, and it is 61 pages.
Jeez.
And it says, we may change any terms, conditions, rates, fees, expenses, or charges regarding your service at any time. Where's the contract in this? That, to me, says they could do whatever they want. And he read that to the judge, or had the judge read it, and the judge says, what does that mean? Does that mean you can do whatever you guys feel like doing?
Yes.
And he basically said yes. And he says, listen, I don't think so. This is basically where you're going to learn your lesson. You cannot tell somebody that you're the fastest wireless network, that you're going to get unlimited service, and bury it somewhere in a 63-page contract, oops, unless we say otherwise.
Right, but I'm not quite going to the unless we say otherwise point. Whether or not the whole contract is enforceable is another really good question that I think the judge was probably irked by. But how they have a valid point, I think, that if they're going to give you unlimited data, they didn't say anything about how fast you can pull that data down, that wasn't guaranteed.
No, they did say exactly how fast you could pull that data down.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere. I mean,
well, they say as fast as. I think they have weasel words in there, don't they?
No, they don't. Look at the commercials that you see all the time. You see tons and tons of commercials about AT&T being the fastest wireless network. And that goes That goes to my point of justifiable reliance. If they're saying it over and over again, my Ferrari analogy, we all know a Ferrari will do 200 miles an hour. But when you take it to the dealer for an oil change and you get it back and it only does 45 miles an hour, you're going to be like, wait a minute, hold on a second. They say, hey, it still goes. It doesn't do 200.
We're kind of crossing into the territory here, though, of not the contract, but the advertising.
Right.
Which, unfortunately, though, they should go hand in hand.
But advertising is not an implied contract, Denise, with the customers. If they say we're the fastest, that doesn't really mean that they have to be.
Fastest. There is a degree of puffery
Did it used to be illegal to lie in ads, or is that just my imagination?
You can't make specific promises in ads and then not keep them, but you can talk about
general
quality
stuff.
Of issues.
Fastest is not a quantifiable.
Exactly. If the contract guaranteed a certain speed, you're going to have unlimited data, not just up to, but at a certain level.
They're not dumb. They're not going to write that down.
No, of course not.
They may have 61 pages, but I guarantee you, there's no words in there about a minimum speed or anything.
Leo, right. I would encourage you to look up the concept of justifiable reliance. It's really important, I think, in the California legal system. And once I started talking about that and giving the examples and showing the advertisements all over AT&T's website about the speeds at which 4G is 4 times faster than 3G and LTE is 10 times faster than this one, that's when I think that I really won the case. That's when the judge really seemed to look like, whoa, wait a minute. And then the point also that the judge made during the decision was, you can't tell him that he's going to have the fastest wireless network and then slow him down and then say, unless he pays more, because the guy said that to the judge. He said, if he is upset about the speeds, he's more than happy to go to a tiered plan, which never gets slowed down. And the judge really got upset with that one, too. He's like, wait, so now you're telling him he can go faster, he can get unlimited as long as he pays for it?
You know. All right, Matt, I'm so glad we're going to run along because we got a ton of other stuff. But congratulations. I'm glad you got the check. I think it's really honorable that you're going to give it to charity. I think that's fantastic. The last time we talked, you said you were going to help your brother do this. Are you going to set up a business?
I actually took a couple of phone calls this morning from some people in the Los Angeles area. I'll go to court with them for free. I mean, the point of this isn't the money. It's just give us what we paid for. Give us what you said that we were going to get. And it's the right thing to do.
It's great to talk to you again, Matt. Thank you for joining us on Twitter.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Matt Spaccarelli, who got his check yesterday or day before yesterday for $935. Why $935? Why'd you get the extra?
$85 for court costs.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, here's the tip. Keep it.
It was like Xerox costs, right? Thanks, Matt. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's Matt Spaccarelli.
Good for him.
Yeah, I think he's kind of he's fighting the fight. Whether, you know, you can go back and forth about justifiable reliance and contract law and all of that, but it just he's fighting just for the justice,
consumer.
The fairness of it, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, AT&T might find some legal justification, but we're talking just being fair.
Yeah. We really should mention, too, that AT&T won a big case before the U.S. Supreme Court last year having to do with a different issue under its mobile contract with users. and whether it was going to be able to bar users from bringing class action lawsuits under that contract, whether its arbitration clause was going to be enforceable because it purported to do that. Two courts in California said no way. Consumers have to be able to bring class actions. The Supreme Court said no. You can bar those class actions. So this small claims case that Matt brought is important because, you know, if he can get a groundswell of support of people to do this, it could take the place of a big class action.
Doesn't cost much, though. I mean, AT&T, yeah. $935, big deal. If, as long as there's not a lot of these.
Right. I mean, who knows how... how widespread this idea will become.
It's bad, but I think more, it's bad publicity. It's not the money. It's the bad publicity.
Make it go away, sign the NDA, end of story, something else bad.
That's what they would have liked to have done.
Yeah.
And Matt did not go for it, and I'm glad
he played it very well. He played it very savvy, I think.
I didn't ask him if he wanted to be a lawyer. It sounds like he's getting ready. Yeah. Would you encourage that, Denise?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah.
All right, now we'll talk about Mike Daisey after this word from Audible. How about that?
That's great. And I just want to say, going back, that the chat room does say they will never forget FreshBooks. So just in case.
No strings attached.
It is so deeply ingrained in their mind.
30 days, free trial.
I will not do the same to Audible. I will keep my mouth shut as of right this moment.
If you can find a way to make Audible just as unforgettable, go for it.
I didn't say I would keep my mouth shut.
No, Joanna, please don't. Let's find something here. Actually, Audible, we don't have to make Audible unforgettable. People remember Audible because we talk about it a lot. We just are huge fans. It's the ultimate audio bookstore, over 100,000 titles now. They do this every year during March Madness. They do a bracket of audiobooks, your favorite audiobooks. So it's the fifth annual Tournament of Audiobooks. If you're an Audible, if you've been watching our Audible ads and you've got an Audible account, you can participate in this. What they do is they have matchups, and you can decide, well, was Solaris, the definitive edition, better than My Dog Tulip? Rules of Civility versus the Psychopath Test. So you this is really great. And then they have the picks. And at the end, we'll find out what the winner is between customer favorites, critical acclamation, and bestsellers. And you can use this. These are the customer favorites. The Wise Man's Fear versus Helter Skelter, The Night Circus. This is, you know, this is silly, but really a lot of what this is about is helping you find great books, because the problem with Audible, there are too many choices. 100,000 books. Now, I'm going to get you your first book, actually your first two books free, but that's only two out of 100,000. Susan Sarandon doing The Member of the Wedding. See, then that would be awesome. Awesome. Oh, wait a minute. Anne Hathaway and The Wizard of Oz. These are all Audible readers, and this is one of the things that makes Audible so spectacular, the great readers. You've heard Samuel L. Jackson, go the F to sleep. It's riveting. He also did A Rage in Harlem. There's Kate Winslet performing Therese Raquin. Just, it's really fantastic. These are all great Audible performances. And that's kind of what I want to emphasize. Yes, you're getting the book. Every word that's in the book. They have a dramatic reading of the AT&T customer contract, all 61 pages. That is unbelievable. You've just got to hear it. It just comes to life. Now, not only do they have great performances, but great books with all the words, but great performances by great actors. And that's what brings these to life. I'm listening to the Song of Ice and Fire. Book two is the Clash of Kings before the HBO series comes out next month. I'm going to finish it. And it's Roy Dotrice just brings these characters to life. And it's just, it's like you're hearing this movie in your head. And I cannot tell you how wonderful Audible is. Here's the deal. If you go to audible.com/twit2, the number two, you'll sign up for the Platinum account. Your first month's free, your first two books are free. You can cancel at any time and keep those books, so you don't have to pay any money. The two books a month is what I do. This is my account. And I just am a huge fan. Finding the books, that's the hard part. But there are so many great books. Here's one about LBJ, Indomitable Will, LBJ and the Presidency. I've listened to every Audible book there is about LBJ. There's even, I think it was Samuel Beschloss who had the recordings from the Oval Office and listening to LBJ talk. In one of them, he's sitting on the can. And he would bring in Sam Irvin and the leaders of the House, Sam Rayburn, and he would be in the John. He'd say, "Come in here, boy." And he would talk to these guys. It's unbelievable. It brings history to life. If you've got a kid, the young adult section is fantastic. Of course, Twilight and all of that stuff, The Hunger Games.
I just listened to The Hunger Games while doing my taxes.
Now, that's a young adult, right?
That's as far as my mental capacities go.
But I think it would be great to listen to.
Oh, well, my whole thing about audiobooks is that whenever you have to do something that's drudgery-based, like laundry, doing the dishes, doing your taxes, put an audiobook on.
That's a good idea.
That's my complete reward structure.
I'm not sure I could do it while doing my taxes because it's distracting.
Like compiling all the numbers.
But certainly while driving. In fact, I drive. I'll go actually drive people places so I can listen to my books. This is The Hunger Games. Suzanne Collins.
It
narrated.
Was fabulous.
Carolyn McCormick.
The other side of the bed is cold.
Peter.
My fingers stretch out, seeking Prim's warmth, but finding only the rough canvas cover of the mattress.
There's not music all the way through it.
No,
that's just the beginning.
The intro and the close.
Yeah. In fact, all of the Hunger Games books are on here. This is just, there's two of them. Three of them. Audible.com/twit2. You could do that before the movie comes out. That would be a good thing to do. Bestsellers, sci-fi. I listen to a lot of history. As I mentioned, young adult, self-development. It's all there. Audible.com/twit2. So you'd recommend this, even though it's a... It's not really a kid's book. It's a young adult.
No, young. I love tween fiction. I mean, I love all the vampires and...
They're actually really well written.
Yeah. There's another great one in there called The Highest Tide that's not a, you know, dying dystopian vampire-ish, but just fun, science-y, great tweenlet. I love tweenlet. It's great.
Your children are four. You've got a way to go.
Yeah, I know.
But you could give them read the go to the after sleep.
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time.
I gotta play.
Don't tell CBS.
I'm just going to play a little bit of this. I won't get to the... This is Samuel Jackson. I think they offer this for free. No, it's $1.71. You could get it as your free book if you really wanted to.
Good.
Just we'll play a little bit, tiny bit of this so we don't get in trouble here with the FCC.
We're not broadcasting.
All the kids from daycare are in dreamland. The froggy has made his last leap. Hell no, you can't go to the bathroom. You know where you can go?
Well, we'll just have to imagine where he's going to go. Audible.com/twit2. You just for that you want to join Audible.
I know.
They were giving this away for free. You should have got it when it was free. That's all I can say. So, Mike Daisy, nice guy. You don't remember him when he came on the Screensavers? Eileen remembers him, right? From the Screensavers?
No, I don't remember.
Sarah does.
Sarah does.
So he was a monologist. He did a bunch of monologues. His most recent was The Agony and Ecstasy of Steve Jobs. And these are stage performances. They're comedy. They're funny. You laugh.
They're poignant.
There's a lot going on. He claims, and see, now I have to start saying things like, he claims that he got an iPhone with some pictures on it, which frankly struck me always as a little bit strange because I can't imagine that sneaking, somehow slipping through. But he claims, and he looked at the pictures of the workers and thought, I would like to know more. Went to Shenzhen, China. That apparently is true. Met with some people, did some tours, but apparently didn't meet with all the people. For instance, he claimed he talked to people who said they were poisoned in the manufacture of the iPhones. He didn't. So there was a considerable amount of made-up material. Not a lot. Well, considerable. Not all of it. Some of it was true. Unfortunately, he was the centerpiece for This American Life. And it's not NPR. It's American
no, it's
Public
PRI.
Radio. PRI. Mm-hmm. Public Radio International. Probably the best radio show there ever has been or ever
fabulous.
Will be.
460-some episodes.
Incredible. Ira Glass, brilliant. And it is a journalistic enterprise, although there's fiction, there's humor in it.
Yeah, they have David Sedaris on occasionally, and he does monologues.
Sarah Vowell.
And...
But in this case, they decided to play Mike Daisy's monologue and then do an investigation of the plant. And then it came out that Mike had made up some of this monologue.
Significant portions.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the specificity of who he talked to, what maladies they were suffering from, what the actual discourse was, and when you listen to the original episode, Ira Glass does a ton of couching where he says, we fact-checked, we talked to this many people, and they said that they have witnessed things of this tenor in Apple factories, at Foxconn. There have been incidences like these. And it was an unusual amount of CYA from This American Life in the episode. And when you I think they were really nervous about it. They didn't trust him completely. And one of the biggest things, it turns out, is when they were doing the fact-checking, he would not give them the name of his translator, who was a central part of the story. He said Kathy introduced him to a 13-year-old girl, or Kathy was with him when this man with the mangled hand, and when the hexane cleaner, the people who'd been had neurological damage from hexane cleaners were with him, and he wouldn't give them
so
Kathy's name.
Who's at fault, though? Is it This American Life for still running with that story, or is it Mike Daisy? I mean, it seems to me Mike's making up a theater piece.
Yes.
Much of which often theater pieces are made up.
No problem. In some senses, in terms of the actual issue of journalistic integrity.
But he's not a journalist.
He's not a journalist. Then he goes on This American Life, wants the publicity, wants the story. He cares deeply about the story. There's no question.
And by the way, there's still nobody saying, well, it's not a truce. In substance, the truth is there. It's just not what he said happened. But nobody, I mean, Apple acknowledged it in effect by opening up their doors and said, yes, audit us.
The two biggest significant fact problems in the story were he made it seem like there are massive underage workers factories.
Right. That's the biggest part right there.
Yep. And then I think the second one that was called out, and all this was the NPR reporter in China just found real inconsistencies, and Rob Schmitz, and he went out and fact-checked it and found the interpreter who said, no, it didn't go down like that.
Oh, boy.
So the second biggest inconsistency is that when people are hurt, they can sue for damages after they're hurt in factory accidents. Those were, I don't know if you picked that
That's
up, Joanna,
a big one.
The two big differences.
Yeah. That's a big one. They can sue. So,
the problem was he went on This American Life.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When
that's the biggest problem. I mean, I don't know who you can point fingers at. I don't know, you know, which one of them.
Mike absolutely is at fault, well as This American. He lied.
Yeah, no, I don't know who. I mean, if there's more blame on one or the other, both are to blame.
However, and you know, wasn't there some good results of this? The New York Times did its big expose. Apple, in fact, asked the Fair Labor Practices folks to report on this. They opened their doors to ABC Nightline. It seems like there was some benefit to all of this, yes?
Great things happened.
Was Apple libeled? Was it misrepresenting Apple?
I emailed Apple this weekend and asked them if they had any comment. Obviously didn't hear back, but I think they... I'm not even sure if there's a victim, except that it goes down to the James Fry's of the world, the Stephen Glasses.
Yeah,
it's that when you misrepresent the facts, you make it seem like the facts aren't strong enough on their own.
Good point.
And they are.
Good point. Yes, good point.
Hey, thanks.
I totally agree. And I think the positive outcome that came from this, although it's sad that it came out at all in the original report, is that Apple became more transparent. People had their attention focused on this. People think maybe, I hope they think more about where these gadgets come from now, given the Nightline report and lots of others like the New York Times reporting it. So, you know, I don't think there was really any benefit into the embellishment that went on, but if we had to pick something, it would be this transparency.
And you could say the negative is that now this casts doubt on... It might make you think, well, maybe Apple doesn't have a problem. Maybe the Foxconn factories are fine, right? Maybe this is all...
I mean, I think that's too far.
I think by nature,
nobody's going to think that.
It's really interesting because Bill Weir, who's one of my new colleagues and the reporter who went to Nightline, really sort of was struck by, you know, he said he kept looking for what Daisy described.
Yeah.
And that he didn't find it, but that doesn't make anything that he reported and the footage that he brought back any less compelling and any less sort of powerful. I mean, when you look at that stuff, you really see that the nature of the problems there. I mean, of course, the pictures of the nets have been around for years, but anytime you do see them, it's very powerful stuff. So, yeah, I don't think, you know, in the end, I don't think there are no issues there. There obviously are very, very big issues, and it should be very interesting to see the results of the audit, which I think we're actually due last week, or we should be seeing them soon.
Right.
NPR, This American Life, did an hour-long, three-act episode on the retraction. And yeah. I found that just as this is all at this point kind of a looking glass into journalism and the media, because I found it fascinating that they were absolutely crushed. I mean, they were so upset. Ira Glass was furious. He felt that his reputation had been impugned. And you know,
well, shouldn't he have done more to vet this stuff? I mean,
all I can say is this.
They made a big deal about how they fact-checked it, but apparently they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, he apologized. I only listened to the first 45 minutes.
Yeah, you can only take so much retraction.
Yeah, you can, but I mean...
Liberals flogging themselves gets really boring after a while.
It's an interesting thing to consider what Apple must be thinking about. You know, do we sue for defamation over this or not? Mm-hmm. Because... you know, the truth is the defense to defamation. So they would come in and say, none, you know, these particular things didn't happen. But what a can of worms they'd be opening to investigate the truth of all that.
That's probably another issue entirely. Let's not.
Right.
Let's just move on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's probably how they feel about it.
And well, I was going to say, I think we can all agree Friday was a pretty great day for Apple. This news came out. The iPads went on sale.
Right.
So.
Apple's
kind of on a roll.
Just a little bit of a roll. Meanwhile, if there is an anti-Apple, an opposite of Apple, it would be Yahoo. A company in such deep trouble. I don't even know where to begin. They're suing Facebook, saying we invented social networking. And there's some merit. They have some patents. Well, the court will decide on that. They fired pretty much the best people working there. This article from Pando Daily, they fired the Yahoo research and development team, Yahoo Research. According to Sarah Lacey, they're all going to Facebook. Whoops. This hasn't been confirmed, but apparently the New York Yahoo research team is all out of work. And many companies are going, okay, well, we'll hire you. If you're smart, if you're good, not hard to find a job with Google or Facebook or somebody. Speaking of which, we got to be pretty proud of our friend Kevin Rose.
Hey.
Who confirmed to me when I emailed him, I said, congratulations. He said, yeah, it's pretty great, huh? He said, more to follow.
So they closed Oink.
So Kevin, after he left G4... where he was a host of the Screensavers after I left, focused all his intentions on two companies, Digg and Revision 3.
Turned down a ton of money for Digg.
Well, reportedly. You know, there's some question. I actually asked him about that. He said, you know, Google looked at us, but ultimately they didn't pull the trigger. Mm. So I don't know if he turned it down or they didn't get, they didn't offer. But Digg then went through some very hard times with their new version. Mm-hmm. Kevin left the company. He's no longer CEO there. He's still, a shareholder at both Digg and Revision 3, but devoted all his attention to his own investments as an angel and to Milk, his new company, MI.LK. And Milk, the idea behind Milk was it was a small team. I think it was seven people there, including Daniel Burka, who's the original designer for Digg, Chris Hutchins. And they made an app called Oink, which I loved, but... 5 months later, not enough adoption. He told us on the stage at Le Web that 150,000 downloads in the first month, which is pretty good, but it just stalled. And what he had always said is, what we're going to do with Milk is we're going to iterate. We're going to do something never done before. We're going to try stuff. If it doesn't work, we're going to drop it and move on. So I wasn't too surprised when he sent an email out to all the Oink people, including myself, saying, we're you know, take your data, we're gone. And they did. They gave you the data, which I don't, it's all in XML. I don't have anything to do with it. But the next day, TechCrunch and All Things D report, Milk has just been sold to Google. TechCrunch said, and I don't know if this is true, and Kevin won't confirm it, 15 to 30 million, which makes no sense at all.
A mil or two to each employee. Then you figure a significant stake to Senor Rose.
And I cannot, I mean, I'm thrilled for Kevin, but I can't quite figure out what they're going to do.
Well, it's social. I mean, it's obviously, it's going back to all of the Google talk this week about it's all about social. It has to be social. And if you can't build it, buy it.
Kevin doesn't say what they're doing. The story was that they would be working for Google Plus.
Right. Makes sense.
I wonder. I still think that maybe there's more to this.
Okay.
Like maybe Revision 3 is also in play.
Okay, okay. So wrap it. But okay, so what you're saying is that they want their own
network.
There's
something else going on.
So
yeah.
Just
that could be interesting.
Thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why, if they have Yahoo, if they have YouTube Studios, why would they need Revision 3?
Same reason they bought Next New Networks. They what they need is, so it's interesting because Revision 3, and this is a little inside baseball, but everybody who watches Twit, of course, knows Kevin well and knows Revision 3. Revision 3 went from being what we are, which is a producer of content, to an aggregator of YouTube stars. Mm-hmm. Their biggest show, mm-hmm. no longer Dignation, that's gone. Not even Techzilla anymore. It's that crazy cooking show.
Oh, that's the
Epic
yeah.
Mealtime.
Drunk
Epic
cooking?
Mealtime.
Oh, no. Their number
Isn't that their
show?
Big show? I think it is.
Wow.
And Phil DeFranco, they have Phil DeFranco, is another huge YouTube star. So what they've done is they've gone to big YouTube stars and said, let us, just as Next New Web did, Next New Networks did, let us help you monetize, market. You focus on what you do best, making these shows. And so they pivoted and became an aggregator, just as Next New Networks is. And that is exactly what Google is doing with YouTube. In fact, we're starting to see the first YouTube channels. Felicia Day, who's going to be on Game On in about an hour, has just announced her channel. Let me find. Do you have the video tease of that?
Geek and Sundry is
Geek and Sundry is its name. And
yeah, I'm really interested in watching all of these.
Yeah,
these
they $100 million Google has put into brands like Shaq. Is Oprah doing something for them? I can't remember. And this is Geek and Sundry.
Can we get the cotton ad again?
So these are all geek culture shows. There's Felicia. She's, I don't know.
Way to move a boat.
And the reason I mention this is Tom Merritt and Veronica Belmont, two of our hosts, are going to be doing their podcast, Sword and Laser. There's Will Wheaton. He's doing, this is an interesting idea for a show. They're going to play board games.
I love it.
I think it's a great idea. This with poker. I wanted to do a Twit poker table. We never got around to it.
Great.
So basically, I gave some unknown amount to Felicia. There's Ben Hupp playing a board game, and of Icon has cheeseburger, and Felicia then gave money to these producers, and so they're producing a network. And I imagine the theory behind this is we'll see what sticks.
Right, throw it all up in the wall. Interesting.
It's to me
very interesting.
Yeah, that's all I can say. I don't know. There's Veronica and Tom.
Yeah,
and,
I know those guys.
Yeah. So that's their book group podcast, science fiction and fantasy podcast. They built a big set next door, a castle. There's a big castle next door. Have you seen it?
No, bring my kids and we'll inflate it and we'll
yeah, it's really cool.
Jump in it.
This is what YouTube's going. I have to say I hate this because I feel like the problem is that because Google is such an important part of the internet in terms of its search, and they favor YouTube so much, it gives anybody on YouTube a huge advantage over somebody like us.
Right,
that's right.
And they completely have they've completely locked us out of YouTube Live. They won't let us do it. They constantly pull down our shows from YouTube itself. It's not a very good platform for us. So I feel like. Because Google is going into the content business.
The content creation business is a conflict.
Stick a stake into my heart and shoot me. And if they buy Revision 3.
No, well, hold the phone. Because you know what I thought we were going to be talking about in the show at the beginning of this week? I thought we were going to be talking about CNN buying Mashable.
And now, is that a true story? Did they do that or not?
No, it's just rumor.
It's a rumor. 200. This is the rumor. And who knows if it's true.
What a strong rumor it was.
Yeah. $200 million. It has not been consummated.
And so I was going to come to you and say, dude, if Mashable's getting bought by CNN, then you've got to become, now that everybody wants to be a content player again, you have to be an acquisition target.
Well, I haven't had any calls.
I know. I'm just saying.
I'm not asking for them. I don't want them. But I'm just, what I'm saying is I worry, and it's not about Twit. I worry about the independent content creator. Because now, one of the things that I celebrated about podcasting was anybody could create a show or a network and compete with NBC and ABC. Clearly, the major networks, with all due respect, Joanna and Becky, but the major networks are struggling. But now what's going to happen? Is Google going to become the new NBC? I hate to see that because what we don't want is media conglomerates. We don't want the concentration of voices. We want everybody to be able to participate. And because Google runs search, that's a real conflict of interest.
I think what you see is a window of opportunity, not a trend and an overall direction. I think you really got in front of this. And,
well, I agree, but it could really be bad. And you know what? This is what Tim Wu always said. He said, don't get all excited about the free and open internet, because as soon as it's financially, you know, viable, the big companies go, thanks very much, you guys. See you later. We'll take over from here. Yeah. They did it with the long distance. And they'll, and he said they're going to do it again with the internet. So enjoy it while you got it, because it ain't going to be yours for very long.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there are more players than just YouTube. I mean, that's why I actually really liked Revision 3 being an independent play. You've got Twit. I know Yahoo gets slagged, and I understand why, but the numbers of video that they are streaming, unbelievable. I mean, my shows are averaging 1.5 million views for every episode.
Really? On Yahoo?
Every episode. Good. We've done 50 episodes. And
I'm
it's
thrilled
like,
to hear that.
You know. Oh, one other thing. This is total sidebar. Last week, you were talking about Coney.
Yeah, Coney 2012.
And you said 78 million views. It's got to be a bot.
Yeah.
I checked the numbers yesterday. It was only 79 million.
Oh, it suddenly stalled.
Which makes me think you're right. I think
maybe the bot got turned off. You saw that the guy who made that video had a little problem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he had a mega breakdown. Wow.
Was it a nervous breakdown? That's what it sounded like.
Yeah, no. His wife says he doesn't have a substance abuse. The video, TMZ posted it. It looks like something from Quest for Fire. It was just, oh, God. Oh, it was so bad.
Minus Ray Dong Chong. Ray Don Chong.
Excuse me?
It's interesting to watch Google get into this business. And I agree with you. It is very worrisome for the independent content creators. But, you know, if it comes back to Google just wanting to sell more ads.
Well, it always comes back to that.
And slap them on video that they've invested in. It's just, I have to hope that they'll continue to use this platform to the benefit of others. But I don't know. I don't have that much hope.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same trend as the whole Google defection this week.
Well, and that's, I'm wondering, they hire Kevin Rose, but the guy in charge of apps leaves.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he claims it's because Google has gone, James Whitaker, I think his name was, and he wrote this long letter basically saying that Google has lost its entrepreneurial and innovative soul.
You know, I don't listen to disgruntled employee leaving letters anymore.
I don't know. That Goldman Sachs thing just rocked my world.
That was
a little different. That was like blowing the lid off Goldman Sachs.
That was pretty remarkable.
And the other thing about that is it kind of confirmed what we all thought anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of skeeving take our money kind of. It just scares me after this time period of the recession and everybody's lost so much money. And I don't know, that just, it shook the underpinnings of what faith I had in the financial system.
You had faith in the financial system.
I just thought there was some, it goes back to the journalism issue on This American Life. I thought there were some principles that people.
You're like me. You believe.
I want
to.
You're an optimist. It's been a sad show.
We're not cynics. Are you a cynic, Joanna? No, I don't think so. Denise?
Oh, yes, I am.
Oh, you are? Oh, okay. Well, you're a New Yorker. You have to be.
Yeah.
I actually see these departures and all the fluidity in a down economy as a good thing.
How so?
After the whole dot-com bust, that's when you saw things like Facebook and Twitter come along. You know, people leave, and whether they're leaving because their companies are getting cutthroat and not having the same vision that they had hoped for, or they're leaving because they're being downsized, you know, it sort of kicks people out into the world and makes them be creative and follow their dreams. And I think that's a good thing.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. I agree. A couple more stories. The end of an era. Encyclopedia Britannica will no longer print a paper edition, web only. I have in the other room the World Book. I thought when the kids were little, I thought, oh, this was so great for me. We'll have an encyclopedia in the house. What is I, moron? then Wikipedia came out a day later.
Yeah, but this is to take the Debbie Downer trend that was progressing from the last 10 minutes of conversation. I'm just going to say this story is not bad. This is a company that gets it.
Well,
only 1% of their sales were in paper form.
It's
99%
kind of hard
digital.
Not to get it when you
right.
Yeah.
They've been making
the
transition
a little too late.
Yeah,
but you know, here's my thing. I'm such a tech evangelist, but I'm not comfortable handing my kids a screen because there's too many other options.
Right.
So I will be finding an encyclopedia in some form for them. Maybe it's older. Maybe it's not 100% up to date. But at least when they have that book in their hand, that's all they're doing, and there's no jelly defense or Angry Birds on it. You know.
Yeah. Well,
you can buy them. You can still buy these.
These things they call the books?
These things called books on shelves. I spoke to the CEO and he was saying, well, we still have some stock left. We expect it to go quickly.
You know what I love? In fact, I would buy that. I would buy it. That's going to be a historical thing. And I have the Oxford English Dictionary, 20 volumes. Mm. I love that. But it's kind of feels anachronistic. It does. Because everything, it's like, look, I have a ham radio corner. What the hell's that all about? I can do it with Skype. I can call around the world for free.
It is. You're getting your ham in through the web from somebody on the East Coast.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I'm using Skype because my antenna doesn't work.
You know what you are? You're faux ham.
I'm a faux ham.
You're spam. You're not spam. You're some sort of pork product.
Becky Worley, ABC. Good morning, America. And my dear
friend. I love
friend.
Doing this show with I you. Love I have such a good you. Time.
I just love having you here.
Apologies for all we've offended.
And of course, Denise Howell, who I just adore, who is just such a rock-solid contributor to the Twit Network every week with that great This Week in Law. Her blog is bagandbaggage.com. What day is This Week in Law? Friday.
It is Fridays at 11 Pacific, 1800 UTC.
Oh, she's got it down.
Ooh. Yes.
I love that. It's so great. I love having you on the network, Denise.
I love being on the network. It's the best part of my week.
Yay. Well, we thank you. I can't thank you enough. And my new friend, Joanna Stern, it's really nice to meet you and your
nice
giant
to meet you
microphone.
Too.
And
she knows her stuff. She's a keeper.
You know what? I am so impressed. I hope you'll come back often.
And I would love to come back.
Good. And the next time you're out here, we got to get you to the studio. I want to leave you.
Maybe we can do an all-girls show again. And next, that will be more appropriate.
Actually, next week we're going to do another woman's show with Veronica. Who else?
Veronica keeps stitching me.
Huh?
Yeah.
Dr. Kiki and Sarah Lane.
Oh, nice.
So it'll be our Twit hosts. But anytime, Joanna, you want guys, you want girls, whatever you want, we'll stock the panel. You want booze? It doesn't matter. Anything you want.
Hey,
now
you're so accommodating.
I'm going to mention what? I'm not done. I know because Tom Merritt is here, and he likes to come in every once in a while and just tell us what kind of week it's shaping up to be. What does the week ahead look like, Tom?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things we'll be covering on Tech News Today in the week ahead. Monday, March 19th, the London Web Summit kicks off in London, England. Tuesday, March 20th, the Nikon D4 and D800 are out. Wednesday, March 21st, the anniversary of the first Twitter post being sent. Also, Microsoft launching the Windows Phone Tango in China. And Thursday, March 22nd, the studio Rovio will launch the game Angry Birds Space.
Oh, I've been waiting
for
that.
On Tech News Today.
Thank you, Tom. Tom Merritt, Tech News Today. Every week, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC. See, I can do that, too. on Twit. I did want to leave you with something. Morgan Webb.
Oh, yeah.
Morgan Webb. We love Morgan. With two Bs. Of course, the host of X-Play on G4 and before that on Tech TV. Mm. And she did a podcast, which I wish she kept doing. But the reason she did the podcast was I had met her and her husband at the airport. And I said, Morgan, you got to do a podcast. Her husband, Rob Reed, started Rhapsody, started Listen.com. And this week gave an amazing TED Talk. He gave it a couple of weeks ago, but it was posted this week. And I just thought we'd end with this. For those of you who are worried about the music industry and the grave impact that piracy is having, this is Rob Reed's TED Talk, and he gave me permission to put this on Twit. A little copyright math for you.
The recent debate over copyright laws like SOPA in the United States and the ACTA agreement in Europe has been very emotional. And I think some dispassionate quantitative reasoning could really bring a great deal to the debate. I'd therefore like to propose that we enlist the cutting-edge field of copyright math whenever we approach this subject. For instance, just recently, the Motion Picture Association revealed that our economy loses $58 billion a year to copyright theft. Now, rather than just argue about this number, a copyright mathematician will analyze it, and he'll soon discover that this money could stretch from this auditorium all the way across Ocean Boulevard to the Westin, and then to Mars. If we use pennies. Now, this is obviously a powerful, some might say dangerously powerful insight, but it's also a morally important one. Because this isn't just the hypothetical retail value of some pirated movies that we're talking about, but this is actual economic losses. This is the equivalent to the entire American corn crop failing, along with all of our fruit crops, as well as wheat, tobacco, rice, sorghum,
cotton.
Whatever sorghum is. Losing sorghum. But identifying the actual losses to the economy is almost impossible to do unless we use copyright math. Now, music revenues are down by about $8 billion a year since Napster first came on the scene. So that's a chunk of what we're looking for. But total movie revenues across theaters, home video, and pay-per-view are up. And TV, satellite, and cable revenues are way up. Other content markets like book publishing and radio are also up. So this small missing chunk here is puzzling. Since the big content markets have grown in line with historic norms, it's not additional growth that piracy has prevented. But copyright math tells us it must therefore be foregone growth in a market that has no historic norms, one that didn't exist in the 90s. What we're looking at here is the insidious cost of ringtone piracy. $50 billion of it a year, which is enough at 30 seconds a ringtone that could stretch from here to Neanderthal times. It's true. I have Excel. The movie folks also tell us that our economy loses over 370,000 jobs to content theft, which is quite a lot when you consider that back in 98, the Bureau of Labor Statistics indicated that the motion picture and video industries were employing 270,000 people. Other data has the music industry at about 45,000 people, and so the job losses that came with the internet and all that content theft have therefore left us with negative employment in our content industries. This is just one of the many mind-blowing statistics that copyright mathematicians have to deal with every day, and some people think that string theory is tough. Now, this is a key number from the copyright mathematician's toolkit. It's the precise amount of harm that comes to media companies whenever a single copyrighted song or movie gets pirated. Hollywood and Congress derived this number mathematically back when they last sat down to improve copyright damages and made this law. Some people think this number is a little bit large, but copyright mathematicians who are media lobby experts are merely surprised that it doesn't get compounded for inflation every year. Now, when this law first passed, the world's hottest MP3 player could hold just 10 songs. And it was a big Christmas hit, because what little hoodlum wouldn't want $1.5 million worth of stolen goods in his pocket? These days, an iPod Classic can hold 40,000 songs, which is to say, $8 billion worth of stolen media. Or about 75,000 jobs. Now, you might find copyright math strange, but that's because it's a field that's best left to experts. So that's it for now. I hope you'll join me next time when I will be making an equally scientific and fact-based inquiry into the cost of alien music piracy to the American economy. Thank you very much.
We'll actually have Rob on because he's writing a science fiction novel, which will be out in July, about what happens when the aliens get sued for music piracy. It doesn't end well for the planet Earth. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I thought that was well worth showing just because the math is pretty dramatic.
Awesome.
And it's kind of the most accurate response to the music industry's claims I've seen. So I guess there's not much more to say except thank you, Joanna. Thank you, Becky. Really appreciate it.
Oh, and one other thing.
One other thing.
Chicks love Leo.
Thank you very much. Well, they dig podcasters. That's what it said. Anyway, thank you all for being here. Thank you, Denise Howell. And we do this show every Sunday afternoon, right after the Tech Guy Show, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Please stop by and watch live, because there's always a lot of fun before and after. And if you can't, well, we make audio and video available at twit.tv. If you would subscribe, it would make me very, very happy. We'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Hey, Veronica made it. Oh, we didn't tell the story.
I know.
We didn't tell the story.
She's so late. She made it. She made it. She got it.
So what happened? You got to tell it. Come here. You got to tell a story.
Here, come sit here.
Oh, I don't need to take your seat.
No, no, sit. All right.
Hello.
So you guys, Tom and you went to WonderCon.
Yes. We went to WonderCon to announce that Sword and Laser is a video show on the
Yes,
Big
and
channel.
We played a little bit of the tease from the...
Oh, nice. Thank you very much.
What is it called? Dangle and Dongle? What is the name of the...
Geek and Sundry.
Geek and Sundry. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Wow. You just want to go back to the dongle.
Dangleanddongle.com.
Geek and Sundry.
Don't go to dangleanddongle.com. I don't know what that is, but it can't be good.
Can't be good right now.
Maybe just invented that.
It launches April 6th?
So Sword and Laser, the first episode goes live on the 13th.
You're going to be on Fridays.
Yes, we're going to be every other Friday. We're rotating with Will Wheaton's show.
Couldn't be better.
Tabletop gaming show.
That tabletop gaming show looks like a lot of fun, too.
It's going to be great.
I just Googled dangle and dongle.
Don't do that.
Me too.
Okay, so it's called what again?
Geek and Sundry.
Geek and Sundry.
Yeah.
So, you can go to geekandsundry.com. You don't have to go through YouTube.
Yep, the trailer's up and a little bit of info about all the shows is there. There's six shows so far.
So you announced, including, of course, the Guild, and you announced that you would be part of this wonderful network. This is one of the new YouTube networks.
Yeah, we're very excited.
Yeah, and I see Paul and Storm, too, which is great.
Yes, they have a scripted show that's going to be really funny.
And Felicia's going to be on your show tonight.
She is, indeed.
Yeah.
Yep.
So what happened? You were flying back from, where is this, L.A., San Diego? Where was
Anaheim. WonderCon?
Anaheim.
So we were at John Wayne, and we got up at like 4:30 because our flight was really early, so we were trying to get back, you know, early enough so I could get home, get fixed up, you know, come in, do Twit, do everything.
And it takes you hours to get ready.
Hours and hours. And we got on the plane, and we were taking off. Like, the plane was going, like, going down the runway real fast, and then all of a sudden, they slammed on the brakes. And the captain starts saying, like, everyone, remain in your seats, remain in your seats, in your seats, remain in your seats. He repeated it, like, six times really fast, and I got, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
And so they stopped the plane, they brought it back to the gate, and they had the mechanics look at it. There was a problem with the electrical system or something.
Oh.
So they made everyone get off, and then not only did
they had it, all it was, is they were taken off, a warning light went off, and they stopped.
Exactly. Which I appreciate, you know, safety first.
Yeah.
That's totally fine, except for the fact that they canceled the flight, and there was no other flights, like, until 6:30 p.m. from LAX. So there was nothing. So we actually switched over, got on Southwest, and got the next Southwest flight out.
Thank you for making it back in time for Game On. I'm sorry you missed the show today, but you'll be on next week. We're going to do another all-female panel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, fabulous.
It's going to be you, Sarah.
And Kiki.
And Kiki.
Nice. That's awesome.
And I thought you were just trying to avoid me.
I know, I'm sorry.
Do you know Joanna?
We've never been on a show together or anything before, and I tweeted at her as soon as I found out I wasn't going to be on. I promise I'm not avoiding you!
Because we were doing last week, the day... Oh, it was
TNT,
the iPad,
right?
New iPad day, and you... Yeah.
And it was
I think you had to go something else too. Maybe you couldn't get back home or something.
Yeah, it was a tough day. So I apologize. Yeah. I'm glad I get
at least get to
see you here virtually in the post show.
It was fun.
Yeah, Joanna was great. And we're gonna have her back. So, and of course, we're gonna have you back.
Talk
one
lots
of, these
of
days.
iPad stuff.
Yes, we did.
I
do you
get
like
in
it?
That studio though one? Next time.
You should, Joanna. It's great. It's really fun here.
You know, I have an iPad too. I don't know if I'm gonna upgrade. Mm. I think maybe it's just not the time for me. I'm sure maybe when Ryan gets one, I'll get my hands on it enough. And
I forgot to mention, GDGT is making some changes.
Gadget, yeah.
They did make the change.
He calls it, he decided
it's
to call it Gadget.
Yeah, it's Gadget now.
Years ago, we were going back and forth.
I know, it was all very confusing. But
so
yeah, it's Gadget now.
Is going to go kind of back to its roots and be more of a review site.
Well, they've got, they have a new redesign up. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to talk about it yet.
Looks like it's
getting
up.
Slammed, but it is up.
So
yeah.
I got an email, like an email.
Oh,
you guys can hear the news here first.
Yeah, I've been a little behind today in keeping up with everything.
So the original idea of Gadget was it was more social. You'd say, I like this, I have this, I want this. Mm-hmm. And certainly I did that and I signed up and so forth. But now he's going to go back to, of course, Ryan Block was editor at Engadget.
Mm-hmm.
I think, was he a founding editor? I think he was.
He was part of the original staff, he was managing editor first and then became editor after Peter.
And so, you know, they're going to go back to what they do so well. Neil A. Patel and Ryan Block and do lots of...
Neil A. is at Verge.
I'm sorry, not Neil A.
Peter Rojas.
Peter Rojas.
Peter and Ryan, yeah.
You understand why I get so confused. It's so incestuous. These guys are all like moving around. Joshua and Neil A. are at The Verge.
Mm-hmm.
Joanna's at ABC.
Yeah, everyone's doing their own thing. It's fun.
This is what you were saying, Denise. This show's a healthy... economy.
Exactly.
People move around.
Actually, I love this design, this GDGT thing.
Yeah, I do too.
They've been working really hard on it.
I love this. This is such a, so it's sort of like taking like Rotten Tomatoes idea.
They're mm-hmm. giving it a score.
It's very Metacritic-esque, and they're disseminating scores from around the net.
So they're using all the major tech review sites.
So this is not just Gadget's score on the Litro. Correct. This is everybody.
Yeah, but then they also put their own, you know, they have their own review, their own spin.
And they still have the have it, want it, had it.
And the user reviews, which I think is one of the best parts, too.
Look at this.
Right.
Very
useful.
So
they write their own reviews also?
I think so. My brain is really tired, and I forget exactly what they're doing. Yeah. But
look at this.
They regularly write reviews for the site on their own profiles too. So they'll continue to do that.
Right. Well, as a gadget reviewer and someone who's very involved in the gadget review world, this looks awesome.
Yeah, I know the team has been working really, really hard on it, getting it out. So.
Would you say it's kind of a pivot?
No, I don't know if I would call it a pivot. Well, maybe.
Refocus?
You'll have to ask Ryan his opinion.
Yeah,
really
you should. You can't. You shouldn't speak for him. You don't work for these guys.
Yeah. No, I don't.
It looks great. I will use
it
a lot.
Yeah, it looks really pretty.
Yeah.
Thank you. He'll be happy to hear you guys say that.
Well, it's a competitive space. In fact, Engadget's starting to look, of all of them, the oldest now, because The Verge looks so hot. This looks great. And that's where, those are the big three, right?
Well, everyone's
and Gizmodo, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everyone's occupying like slightly different spaces. They're doing similar yet somewhat different things also. So
I like this quantification of it. I like I think the score. I think people are looking for a quick and easy way to understand if this is something I should look at or not.
I hope Ryan's not watching. He's probably like, "Why are you not explaining this better?"
You're doing fine, and I put you on the spot. And you're right.
I can explain it. I see totally what's going on here. So the critic review on the left is they're either taking the score of what the site took,
right,
or they're putting it on a different scale. So I worked at Laptop Magazine for a very long time, and I know I'm very familiar with their scale, and they do 1 out of 5 1 out of 5, and they've upped it to a 10-point scale on GDGT
to normalize it,
to normalize it, and now they're sort of assigning scores to sites that don't have scores either. So something like Slashgear, they don't have scores, but they sort of read their review and they felt like, oh, well, this was a 9 on the MacBook Air. And then they're taking all of that and they're giving it an average on the critic review.
You're hired.
Yeah, and the slant on this.
I'm very familiar with this space. And then so on the user review, they've got all the users on the right-hand side, and the users are actually rating on the 10-point scale and doing it over there.
Right.
I love the new redesign in this part especially.
This is really pretty.
Well, and the slant on it is it's quick. Mm-hmm. It's one-page take. So you know.
All the important info
what they're saying is
up here above the fold.
These 20-page reviews that you see on some other sites, that's fine. If you want that kind of detail and so forth, fine. But if you want a quick take on should I, you know, good or not, this is it. And here's a synopsis of what others have written. I think this is very effective.
I'll call Ryan and make sure we get some ABC.
Well, Ryan actually just texted me and said he'd love to jump on Skype and tell you about
it. Go ahead.
He's like, wait.
If you want to get ready, because
we can't do anything until you guys are done anyway. So I'll just hang out here. I'll just stay here for the next hour.
Let me grab Ryan for a
second. And I can't do anything until I eat dinner.
Go ahead and eat dinner, Joanna. Thank you. You don't know what dinner is? You live in the New York City, the world of dinner.
I don't know what my dinner is.
It's the dinner at your door. There's 800 chicken places. Have some chicken.
Just order some chicken.
What made you go with chicken?
And 21
chicken. Actually, chicken was the big thing for a while, but now it's all halal food and stuff. But chicken, for a while, it was like rotisserie chicken was on every corner. That was maybe when
the best falafel ever is in New York. Mamoun's.
You there, Ryan?
Mamoun's.
Yeah, that place is amazing.
That place is so good.
I hear that the halal cart at 53rd and 2nd is the one to go.
Hey, do you hear us, Ryan?
Really? You didn't just make that up?
Hold on just a second. Good.
You were just in New York.
I was in New York for 3 minutes, yeah.
Say that again?
Hey, Ryan.
Hi.
So what did Veronica get wrong?
I came in a little bit late. I just heard, at first I saw my Twitter stream blow up.
I did my best.
I had forgotten to mention it on Twitter. And since Veronica was sitting here, I wanted to mention the new design and gadget and what a great job you've done. And Joanna Stern actually did a really credible job of explaining what you were up to.
She did you justice. I could not. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it sounded. Now I have the prototypes from the site actually behind me.
How long have you been working? And the question I asked Veronica, which she didn't answer, she deferred to you, is this a pivot?
I don't know. I guess it kind of is.
That was my answer. I mean, see?
We've done reviews on the site for a very long time, but not like this.
So it's more a refocusing from the social site to more of a review site.
Right, exactly. So we found a couple things. One, the user reviews on the site was always one of the best parts of the site. Yep. It was one of the things that people got the most out of and enjoyed the most when they contributed to them. And the way that we do user reviews is very unique, with like a kind of criteria-based rating system. And what the users kept telling us was that we should be doing more in the review space. And, you know, I'm not really satisfied with what publications out there are doing. I mean, I think that there's a lot of really amazing reviewers out there. And, you know, I think they've definitely carried the torch into the new media space since, you know, we've kind of gone into the, you know, post, you know, magazine-like review form online. But we haven't done the next step, which is to build an experience that's much more useful on top of the great review work that other people are already doing.
Well, that's what I was saying is this. I think people, you know, while there's a place for the 20-page review, what people really want is a single page they can go to and get a, is it worth buying? What are the pros and cons? And you do this really well by both aggregating other people's reviews, your conclusions, and I think you're right. I think highlighting the user reviews is a really great idea. Plus, the design is fantastic.
Yeah, the pictures look great,
too. Yeah, the design is beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it's just, you know, this is kind of like where my personal tastes have gone over the years as well. You know, I mean, Joanna knows as well as anyone, you know, how intense it can be to be in the new space, and, you know, what it's like to have to deal with a fire hose of information. Mm-hmm. And I personally can't deal with that anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. Now I need somebody to break it down as efficiently and effectively as possible. So I don't have to waste 10 hours to find out if a product is actually worth taking a better look at.
Mm-hmm. How big is your team now, Ryan?
We're about 15 people.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
People are making fun of his iPod headset, but he's just at the office. He doesn't have his good gear in the conference room. He wasn't expecting to be on the show.
This was an emergency call.
These snobs. They're probably. I'll send you a good headphone review here.
Well, actually, I'm just looking at the headset reviews right now on Gadget, and it looks like there's some very good choices out there, like the Logitech BH320 or the Rokat Cave, which I had never heard of.
Yeah, there's so many
look
good
at these
headsets.
I'm going to have to read these reviews because we send them out.
There's so many bad headsets, too.
That's right. That's accurate. So, sorted by score, this little one from Logitech.
Do you know I only use bad headsets?
Why is that, Joanna? So then you
because I lose them everywhere.
Oh.
Yeah.
I will buy like a $150 headset and I will lose them.
Yeah.
I always lose the little, like the plastic earbuds, and then I forget where I put all the replacements. So then I just have like a really sharp thing in my ear.
Yeah, I do that too.
Nobody likes
that. I do
that
all the time. And I'm like, oh, this is definitely going to damage my hearing. But it's cool. I really need to listen to this Spotify while I'm writing or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad we could give you a little plug. I'm really excited about the redesign and congratulations on the launch.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about getting my ABC News reviews up here. Don't worry.
Sure. Yeah. No, we'd love to have your reviews. I mean, we haven't even actually officially launched it yet. We just kind of put up the site and we've been fixing bugs all day. So we're actually.
I got the email today. Like
I did too.
Sort of teased it, right, to users.
It's because you're a member of the site and you follow. And so basically the people who follow me on the site, like my friends on the site, see when I post.
Oh, that's what it was. That's what it was. Oh. Yeah. Ryan just posted a story. That's what it was. Yeah.
Mm. Right. Because I get whatever you write or whatever comes through on that. But I thought it was like a public newsletter.
Oh, yeah. No,
whoops.
Not yet.
Well, did we like break your embargo?
No, it's fine. I mean, we put it public. Anybody can go see it. It's out there. It's just, you know, we're still fixing bugs and kind of getting it ready for, get it ready for people to really kind of dig into.
Yeah, here's the email.
I didn't start Ryan the conversation, Block started by the way. I didn't do that.
No, I asked him because
I didn't turn on the fire hose.
No.
I meant to say, now, as long as we got you, Ryan, what do you think? You also broke this story, for me anyway, getting it in my email, that Apple's going to make an announcement on its cash balance. What do you think the announcement's going to be tomorrow?
Obviously, this redesign site.
The redesign gadget, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're going to go on a buying spree starting with us.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Nah, that would be... They wouldn't know what to do with us.
$1 billion. No.
I don't know. I mean, I think dividend seems certainly feasible. I don't think that they're going to announce that they're going to start a wireless carrier or anything. I mean, that's like what everybody's speculating. No. But if they were going to do that, they wouldn't do it under the guise of here's how we're going to, you know, address our financial considerations with our cash in the bank. They would do an announcement. They do a proper public press announcement.
What's weird, this is kind of unprecedented. This is, you know, they just had their public meeting, their shareholder meeting. Their quarterly call wasn't so long ago. This is just kind of out of nowhere, all of a sudden. Of course, their stock price hit $600 on Friday. They had a great launch week last week, as Joanna pointed out, with the iPad. But it just, it's not, this is something new. I think this is a Tim Cookie kind of thing to do. It's not certainly something Steve would have done at a 9 a.m. Conference call on what we're going to do with our $100 billion. I'm curious. Yeah. I think you're right. Dividend, which, by the way, is something Steve always refused to do. Apple never offered a dividend. And so this would be a significant story. In fact, they even said at this shareholders meeting, no, don't get your hopes up. We're looking at it, but we don't, you know, it was really one of those, yeah, we're looking at it.
Tim Cook thinks of finances and, you know, Apple's position in the stock market very differently than Steve did.
I think so.
I mean, Tim Cook, I think, looks at it like a finance guy and like an operations guy.
Right.
And Steve looked at it as a burden and, you know, something that just, you know, is a reality of being a big company that they had to deal with. At least that's kind of how I've always perceived it.
I think he's going to get on the phone and the first thing he's going to say is, neener, 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 Mike Daisy's a wiener. And just that will be it. So, thank you, Ryan.
One can only hope.
It was nice. It was the most I've seen Ryan in 2 days.
Aww. If you two want to have a little time together,
no,
just put them
good.
In the double box and we'll all leave you alone.
Great,
Oh, hi.
Oh, that's adorable.
Like, start singing Somewhere Out There, like from Five
Will
Goes West.
I feel like I'm on the third wheel.
Somewhere out there. All right, this is cheesy. Cut it out, Eileen. All right. All right, go get ready for my show.
Go get ready for Game On. Veronica Belmont will be back in a moment with Brian Brushwood as soon as we clear the set. Joanna's been dying for something to eat. Go have something to eat.
Bye.
Bye, Joanna.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Joanna. Thank you, Denise. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. So great to see you again.
Can't say it enough. I just adore you. Thank you for coming.
All right. Take care.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.